and welcome to episode 221 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And if we are the B and the L, he's most definitely the T, it's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hello. You got a bit saucy before we came on.
Yes, it's been crazy, and it's partly because of our guest this week. Yes, this week...
Yeah, she started it.
Yep. We are joined by artist friend and long overdue guest to this show. Yeah. It's everyone's favourite, Sarah Harris. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah.
You're right, Sarah.
We'd say finally have you on. We had you on for a little two-minute interview before, didn't we? But this is like the proper episode.
Yeah, I can't remember where you talked to me, but yes, you did.
It was at your. It was at Swindon. It was at the event you ran in Swindon. I did an interview.
Oh, yeah.
That was it.
See, and this has been long overdue. She used to tell us, oh, I can't be on the show, I can't be on, you know, podcast, I'll be so nervous. And then we turn around and she appeared on Gareth Hopkins Alpha Pod show. And broke our hearts, but she's making up for it now by joining us this week. Especially now that, you know, she's lost the excuse of, oh, I don't make comics. Well, you do now.
Yes.
I did. I'm retired.
Oh, no, you're not.
No.
You've agreed to do another one with me, and you know that for a fact. That's a verbally binding agreement, Sarah Harris.
One page. I said I'd do.
Good.
Sarah made a figure of one of my characters out of Vanguard.
Oh, yeah.
Lest we forget. That's fantastic. I couldn't believe when that turned up.
We've got a Funko of the Red Mask. Basically, Sarah's one of the nicest people in comics, just full stop.
Yeah. What are you doing on here?
Yeah, I know.
You bullied me until I said yes.
Yeah, this is the story for those who want to know. I said to Vince, why don't we get Sarah on? And he went, oh, I don't know. She wants like a month's prep time or something. I said, I'll sort it. I was emoting. So I texted Sarah saying, oh, by the way, you're on Sunday. And then you just texted me with loads of text messages, just kept saying panic on them.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, all of our guests panic, don't they, before they come on.
And they ease into it.
Yeah. I'm glad it's not just me.
No.
I was going to go out and get some beer so that I could be relaxed, but I thought if I do that, because I have no tolerance to alcohol whatsoever, I'll just be even worse. So I didn't. I'm drinking.
So you're just on ketamine. Lovely.
Just you're drinking right now, Vince.
My natural.
Vince, you're having a drink, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a bit worried about tonight if you're drinking.
Why? I don't. When I say I drink, I'm not drinking heavily.
You said you had a bottle of Jack Daniels in front of you.
No, I finished that five minutes ago.
Do you know that acting drunk is the hardest acting you can do, because it's quite a difficult thing to do?
Is it really?
You
can usually always tell when someone's faking it.
Yeah, you can't you? Mm.
Really? Oh, well, we'll test that out probably at Thought Bubble. Anyway, yes, Sarah's joining us for the whole show this week, and she's listened to the show long enough to know that it's A, unprofessional, 2, we don't know what we're talking about, and 3, we're going to have some recommends at the end of the show, and we've already got some nice ones lined up.
I don't know if you guys remember this, but we first knew Sarah, as she used to write us, we were a bit frightened of Sarah for a while, wasn't it? That's true, lads, wasn't it? She used to write us critiques of each episode, do you remember?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'd forgotten that. Like numbered, pointed.
Yeah.
Like, not critiques. It was, I said about my life.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to note stuff down as I listened, and I thought I was being helpful.
You were. But we were quite frightened of you. Still.
Yeah. Well, we first met Sarah when she was in one of the best cosplay costumes I ever saw at Melksham Comic Con, when we were greeted by Rocket Raccoon. Were you not there? You were there.
No, I wasn't there that year.
I didn't meet Tony. It was just as well, because you know how much he hates cosplayers. He probably would have punched me.
No, Sarah. I punch all the other ones, not you. But the first time I met Sarah was at London Super Comic Con.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
God, this
and
is...
You made me take a photo holding my copy of Vanguard and, like, looking really, really awkward, because you said let's take a photo, and I was standing there holding the book up, like trying to smile and trying to work out what I was saying.
You had before we came on air, you posing as comes into a whole new realm of
Oh dear. You know what also goes off the rails every week? Normally our ad for our lovely Comic sponsor, House. Comic House. Yes. Yes. We are sponsored. Who would have thought it? But yeah, Comic House are the sponsor of this little show. We had Pete on a couple of weeks ago for a fantastic talk about digital comics. But Comic House itself is an indie comic marketplace with a difference. If you sell your comics, and like, it's just another way to get your work out there. If you self-publish, you can list your like book, like if you've got physical copies, on their site for free and start selling straight away. They've also got an app, which is brilliant, especially for those just starting out with digital comics, because on Comic House, the library is growing all the time. And yeah, they've normally got a feature section and everything. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
We're in the top 10 again.
Hey! Oh, nice. Like Bros.
Well, they're in the top 10 twice.
They're not in the top 10 right now.
Is there a top 10 still? Is there still a top 10?
I don't know if it is top 10. Look, comics isn't a competition, guys. It doesn't matter who's number one. As long as people are reading comics, let's all be friends, yeah?
Yeah, but we want money to... No, who makes money out of comics? Certainly not me. Yeah.
So this week we've got Gallant and Amos issue 6 from Fair Spark Books, Meat and Tales of Astoundment from Marcosia, Leaf from again from Fair Spark Books, Ting Budong from John Schwartz.
Did you say then?
It's called Ting Budong.
Okay.
I've only got the title. I can't editorialise. Got Surrealsville issue 15 from Rob White, Parallels 2, Gods of Men 2, which is fantastic, and Lady Phantom 3.
Oh.
And thousands more on Comic House.
Yes.
I reviewed one of Nicole's books, who did Leaf, Nicole Bates. Do you know that Nicole's got a hotel? Do you know that?
No.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah, I reviewed one of her books today on the blog.
Well, hang on. You drop a bit of information like that in, and then you just glaze over it.
Well, the Nicole Bates has got a hotel.
Yeah. It's a motel. The joke would have landed better if you'd have said
yeah, that. Exactly. Exactly.
Did I tell you I've got a mate for 18 months?
What I think is brilliant is I honestly didn't get that joke until Sarah just explained it to me.
Yeah.
That's how much you messed jokes. It up, Esmond. But what you haven't messed up this week is our sponsorship ad. So definitely check out Comic House. Just ignore him, everyone.
He's trying.
Just ignore him. He'll be fine. He's like a T-Rex. If you just ignore him, he won't spot you.
I'll bring up your nose.
But yes, there's loads of great digital books on the Comic House app. And there's a 14-day free trial. And the library's just getting bigger all the time because more and more people are adding their books. And it's not... As far as I know, it's not like Netflix, where every time you want to watch something, you go to search for it and it's disappeared, even though you've seen it for the past 3 months on there. And Comic House, the library's growing all the time. So to find out more, go to comichouse.com and, just find out about these great people who are deciding to sponsor this show, even though we do this to their reputation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, on with this week's show.
Yes.
It's a bit of a... This, as we speak now, September is just ending, October's just about to begin, and we've talked about convention season, which we say starts around February, don't we?
Sort of restarts, doesn't it?
And then it paused for a bit during the summer. I know there's some shows and certainly lots of things going on, but as we speak, the next few weeks are going to be very, very busy for us here in Awesome Towers. I've called it that, and I think I'm just going to keep calling it that from now on. Because we've got conventions out the wazoo all over the world, up and down the country, not just ones we're going to be at, but there seems to be events happening all over the UK and beyond. In fact, we put a shout out about, before we get stuck into the topic, we put a little shout out about MCM Glasgow, didn't we?
Yes.
Which was this weekend,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Which, from what I gather, seemed to go quite well.
Yeah,
I think.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I've seen happy people saying that they were selling very well. Like, so, who was it who sold out on their first day? So they're basically sat there today with no stock left at all. But I mean, that's not bad going, I suppose.
It's a good problem to have, isn't it?
It is. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I certainly saw clips of like people queuing up to go in on the first day. I think it was Mark Abnett. He had a video. He shared a video of like.
Oh, I think it was Mark who sold out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He put a post on the group and he's saying, "If you're there, pop over because I'm a bit bored because I've sold out."
Yeah. But yeah,
it's a
yeah.
tricky one gauging it as well, because you can bring fucking shitloads of stuff and not sell.
Yeah,
you can have direct first hand experience of that.
Yeah,
that's my week this week is working out what to order for all the upcoming No Brow shows.
And it's a difficult one, because you can't say, oh, it's empty. That's the MCM issue. You'll either always sell out or you won't sell anything. But I think it's across the board. You don't know.
You ain't got a clue.
Yeah.
We ain't got a clue anymore. We can't judge it. Yeah. There's the odd one where we kind of know you're not going to really. You know, there's a couple that historically have just been disasters.
Yeah.
But even like little zine fairs and stuff we've been taken off at.
It's
difficult to work out.
Yeah. And certainly we've talked a lot about conventions over the past like couple of months or so. But it certainly benefits you if you've got something a bit more to offer, as well as the books sometimes. If like you're an independent doing it on your own, sort of, you know, you've got like the people like John Tucker's of the world, and you know, all these great people like Charles Raymond and stuff doing like commissions of D&D characters and all of this. All he does is Fakemon, doesn't he? Which is a fantastic idea.
Yeah,
so you know, it helps you if you've got stuff like that as well. But it's hard to judge. I mean, certainly I'm looking forward to the next couple of months. Obviously we've got two shows which we're going to give a shout out to later. Tony's out and about all over the shop, which we'll talk about in just a minute. I know,
because
Sarah's going to be at one of these shows as well.
Convention
season is certainly properly in full swing, and it seems like all the convention organizers and stuff have, it's almost like they've had a party and decided to just take place at the same time, which is,
it's a bit, isn't it?
Which is, no one's going to make all of them as a punter or as an exhibitor, and certainly it'll be painful for your wallet if you did. But whatever shows you go to, you know, we hope that they're absolutely fantastic times. Tony and Sarah may meet each other.
Yeah, hoping to have a meet up. We're having a meet up with what day are we meeting up, Sarah? Is it Saturday? We're meeting the Cumber, Mr. Cucumber. We're meeting him.
This is at New York Comic Con this year.
Yeah, so I'm flying out Wednesday morning. Are you flying out? When are you flying out, Sarah?
Wednesday afternoon, evening.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
I'm just behind you.
Right.
Dangerous place to be.
Yeah, it's better than me being behind you. Let's face it. So New York is 4 days, Thursday to Sunday. I'm flying out the Wednesday, getting off the plane and getting a cab all the way to the Javits to help with the setup, because it's quite a, I think MCM's bad. New York's like a week setup, I think, you know.
Yeah, you're gonna be there with No Brow, aren't you?
Yeah, so I'm on the No Brow. Well, but essentially, if you look us up, you won't find a No Brow table, but you'll find a Hilda table. So we've got one end of the Hilda table for books.
Right.
So we'll be selling the books there, me and Jeff. So pop by if you're there. But it's a long day. I think by the end of the panels is sometimes like 10 o'clock at night at New York.
Wow.
So I can't remember what time it opens, Sarah. Is it 10?
10, yeah.
Yeah, it opens at 10.
I'm not staying past 4 either of the days I'm there, because I've got other places to be and people to see and places to go.
You're in New York as well, isn't it? You know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The swinging scene in New York's pretty cool. So we'll be.
Are you talking about like the swings in playgrounds?
No.
Then I don't know what you're talking about.
So I mean, it opens at 10, and we obviously got to be in early. And then you're not leaving till after 10, and it is constant. You know, it's like if you want to get across a hall at New York, it's like you shuffle for about 3/4 an hour just to get anywhere near the exit.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
See, the more I hear about it, the more I'm put off. Although I'm glad I'm not going Saturday and Sunday, and I presume they're busier than
Friday. The late Sunday is good for buying, so I do a lot of my back issue shopping on the Sunday.
Yeah.
But the Artist Alley, which is, I'm guessing, is probably where you'll go, Sarah, knowing you're a comics fan. That's a lot easier. It's still busy, but it's a lot freer to walk around. And there's little bits you can sit down on the floor at the side wall and stuff like that. And that's quite nice. Cool. But the main floor with all the, you know, pop culture stuff is just crazy, crazy. But
I'm planning on walking through that once, just out of curiosity to see what it's like. And that's it.
As you look at it, as you look at the Javits, the far right-hand side normally, I didn't go last year, but normally is where the OA is and the back issues.
Right.
The OA is...
So they're upstairs. Okay.
Yeah, the OA is worth looking at, the original art, because it's just...
Oh, yeah, like definitely.
Kirby pages and Wrightson. Ditko, and you know, you know, you name the person, Wally Wood. There's there's just pages.
Will there be some I can actually afford?
Yeah, I mean, I bought like a Timothy Truman page. I bought a Timothy Truman page for $20 last year.
Wow!
Oh wow!
Yeah, Keith Giffen for $25.
You know, great. My big Mylar curry sleeve. I mean, that's basically what I want to buy is some pages. That's what all my budget's going towards.
Well, there's some Hot Flips stalls there, so you can get the sleeves. You can get the big plastic sleeves, you know, depending on what size the artwork is. It's worth waiting till you get there to see what size it is, because different eras and different companies use different size paper, you know.
Yeah. Well, mine's, it's bigger than A3, the one that I normally take, and I've never found anything that didn't fit in it yet.
Yeah. So come on then. Come on, Mrs. Moneybags. What are you buying? What you got planned?
Oh, I don't know. That's what I mean. But that's what I'll buy what I come across that I like when I get there. But that's what I want to buy more original pages than books, because books are heavy and I don't want to.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You are right. Yeah.
We are definitely, I think, in the future, near future, it's something I'm planning actually, and I'm talking to the guys off air about it. But original art and the whole market of that and the sales of it is a topic we haven't discussed yet, and we definitely want to have a show about that. So that's definitely in the pipeline.
There's a real art to buying it as well. You know, I know collectors who wait, who know when a book's going to drop, because they take their art dealer for that person out for lunch. You know, there's that sort of stuff going on. So, well, you know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah.
Sarah, you know, so...
I do,
yeah.
People buy whole books as well nowadays, don't they? They'll buy like every page of the book, and it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I wish I had that much money.
I can't remember who it is who's got a whole Commandy issue. Is it Larson? I can't remember now.
Eric Larson, yeah.
Yeah, that's a... Oh, I mean, it's unaffordable now, Kirby stuff, but when I first started going to conventions, you know, it was affordable.
Yeah.
It's just, you just weep when you sometimes you look at these pages and you think, I remember looking at, I've got a Master of Kung Fu hung up in front of me, and I remember looking at it thinking, it's $100. Do I buy it? You know, and it's a Gene Day page, and I'm thinking, do I buy it? It's $100. I've got, you know.
Yeah,
And I'm glad I did, because now it would be 10 times that.
I mean, you know? I'd love to get some original art, but I've got nowhere to display. You know, I'd want to display it and, you know, have it.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, I know some people have like folders of the stuff and they keep it in drawers and stuff. For me, if you've got that kind of stuff, it's got to be on the wall. It's got to be pride of place. It's got to, you know.
I rotate mine. So I have mine mostly in frames, some in click frames.
Yeah.
And I'll rotate it. You know, every so often, you know, there's a couple of pages that stay there.
Yeah,
there's a couple of
things I do that with prints
up
as well. Like, you know, if you've got, if you know, like, what frames you've got or what size you're working with, then I think that's a great idea to sort of like just circulate it every so often and freshen it up. But it was like Lawless in, when was that? That was May, wasn't it? Was it March?
Yeah. I think you're right, yeah.
And the room, back of one of those rooms, there was just a couple of folders just open, and there were pages just sort of scattered around from like 2000 AD and stuff. And you just look at it, and you know, it's wow. It's ridiculous. Like just sit when you can, the tangible feel.
Yeah.
Of like a painted page sometimes.
Yeah.
Which
I like to buy pages that I remember reading. You know, that really sort of were noteworthy when I read them. You know,
yeah.
Do you have to like displaying them? Say you're going to hang them on the wall. I guess you've got to be careful where you put them, because if they keep on getting hit by sunlight, well, that obviously that will fade.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you've got to be careful.
Special glass.
Yeah.
If you get museum glass, it's you know, it filters out the sun rays or whatever. It's expensive. I mean, it's probably not as expensive as the page you're putting in it, but it's worth it.
Framing is supremely expensive. Yeah, it costs. Yeah. Certainly, if you're just buying prints, it'll cost more than your print a lot of the time.
But like, if you're buying a Kirby piece or something that's like, it's an investment, or like an investment, you surely you want to invest in that as well.
Yeah,
yeah. Alex, I've got one in front of me that's Alex Robinson did for me, the first New York I went to, so the early 2000s, and it's fade. I put it in the wrong place, and some of the pencil lines on that has faded as well. But I had it above my desk at work for a while, so it's sort of one of those sort of things. Yeah.
But
I think the other thing you started seeing more of, I don't know if you've seen this on eBay or anything, is color guides. So they're selling color guides to
the comics. Yeah.
And I'm not sure how you prove that is. You know what I mean?
So like an in-house colour guide for like, so like a kind of a manual of how to colour every character.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they'd have like the breakdown of the colours they use within it.
Yeah, if you have a look online now, there's quite a few. I'll put a link up on the Facebook group and see what people think of it. Yeah. There's a couple of my exec pages actually that are out that I was sort of tempted, and they're a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, okay.
Because they're not the original art. They're just, you know, saying this is the colour of this costume, this is the colour. They even the little notes in the margins and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's still neat, isn't it?
Yeah. I think certainly this would tie nicely into our topic this week. But yeah, New York Comic Con. Obviously, Tony's going to be there with No Brow, so he's going to be there.
Yeah, if you're there though, and you just message us on one of the apps we're on, you know, and come and say hello. We're really looking forward to it. The just one before we go off that, Vince. So, Sarah, who, what artists are you looking out for? Is there anyone that you would love to buy? You know, anyone that you think if you saw art by, you'd buy.
What? Who's there?
Any art. Well, you know, original art. So you're going to buy a page of original art.
God, I don't know. I don't know what I could afford. That's the problem. Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping stuff will be cheaper there than it would be here. But it might not be. I don't know. As you say, if I see something and it's a page that I remember from something that I've read that I loved and I can afford it, I'll buy it. So
what would be in your wheelhouse, Sarah? What I'm thinking, knowing you as I do, I'm just going to say some maybe early Vertigo or something like that, or what sort of thing?
Yeah. You know, I'm a Vertigo girl. I mean, I'd love to get some. As you say, going on to the theme later, I'd love to get some painted pages, you know, sort of rather than just line work, because you do see them sometimes. And painted comic art is my favourite thing in the world, so that would be gorgeous to, like, I don't know, could imagine a page from like Moonshadow or something, like sort
of. Oh yes.
That would be amazing. So
yeah, or
I mean,
a Sinkovich page or something. Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, but I probably wouldn't be able to afford, would I? But I mean, like, sort of, I don't know. So I mean, I know what I like when I see it. But yeah, I love painted stuff. I'd love to. When I get original art, I like the more they've sort of corrected it, and the more they've stuck bits over things, and the more they've white outed it, you know, like the stuff like that. The more I love it. So I like the really, really messy pages that they've really worked at and sort of, you know, worked into.
Yeah.
Moonshadow's John J. Muth, is it? John J. Muth?
Yes.
Yeah, he's got a lovely style. He's not talked about enough, I don't think.
The Wolverine things, do you remember at the Comic Mart?
Was in that Breakdown or something like that?
Havoc and Wolverine Breakdown, the miniseries.
So that was in the early days of the prestige format stuff, wasn't it? And he's got a real sort of, he's very Sinkovich, isn't he?
He's not quite as
experimental.
Yeah, exactly. He's not quite as sort of abstract and not quite as energetic. But no, lovely painted artwork.
I find him influenced. I would say maybe something like Jeffrey Catherine Jones influences a bit that sort of distant, sort of echoey style.
Like sort of pastel colours and sort of, you know, quite like sort of faded out. Yeah, lovely.
Okay. I was chatting to Falpy today about. He bought the Treasury edition of Captain America's Bicentennial Battles, where it is. And I was reminded that Barry Windsor-Smith inked Kirby's pages on that. Imagine a page of that. Oh,
there's
dear.
A combination.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. There you go.
Yeah. So, a lot of artwork talk already, which is perfect for this week's show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when New York comes, who knows if we'll get some audio from there? You never know. You never know.
I'm travelling out with Mr. Wild Goose, so we might do a bit of an on the road.
Mm.
I haven't told him yet that, but yeah, that sounds like a fun thing to do.
We can mention Chris's Wild Goose project.
Well, yeah, why not? As we're
we've all watched it, haven't we? Have you watched it, Sarah?
Yes.
Very good.
It's amazing.
Yeah. What we're talking about is this is the trailer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which has been released for the short film of a book that's been mentioned quite a few times on the show in the past.
Book of the Year from a couple of us, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. This of course is Porcelain, a gothic fairy tale, isn't it? That's the full.
I think you're right.
Title of the book, but I think it's just called Porcelain, isn't it? The short film. Yes, that was released this week. We'll put a link in the show notes. Because anyone who knows this book, and I know a lot of our listeners have already got it, if you haven't got it, I know we big up an awful lot of books, but in all seriousness, this is a trilogy of books just across the board, storytelling wise, is pretty unrivaled.
Let's not mention that. Forget Ben. Ben Reed as well, who wrote it.
You know, I mean, they're the nicest, one of the nicest creative teams in comics.
And the drunkest people we've had on the show for a while.
They're absolute monsters. Quite
brilliant. Yeah.
I had to bleep out a C word when someone was talking about something, but I'm not going to say who that was. No, but we love them in all seriousness.
Christian saying something at me rather than to me.
Porcelain is a stunning story, just in general. And just seeing there's three books that, if they do a fourth one day, that would be beautiful. If they only ever manage to do the three, it's a perfect trilogy.
Oh, it's so good. It ends, the ending of it broke my heart. Genuinely.
Yeah. I cried so much.
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
Fantastic. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah, yeah. And the first book has been essentially adapted into a short film, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it looks beautiful. The trailer was released. Congratulations to everyone who was working on it.
Christian's brother, isn't it? Who helped on it. And Lenny Henry, I love Lenny Henry. He's so cool. I was speaking to Zach Cobb, I think his name is. He's a listener and he works in Forbidden Planet. And he was saying every week Lenny Henry comes in, buys some books, unassumingly buys books because he loves comics. And I'm thinking that's like the best thing ever. He looks so good. In that role. So good.
Yeah, and it is a comedy role as well.
I reckon that's because he's doing loads of acting on the stage, and I think that takes it out of you, doesn't it, a bit?
Yeah,
I bet. Yeah. Especially if you're doing a matinee performance as well.
But it does look brilliant, and obviously just the special effects as well. We don't want to spoil it for you. If you don't know anything about this graphic novel, when you watch the trailer, you'll be like, oh, I need to read this, and you can. So... When is it going to be released?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't know. I shall ask him.
It'll probably do it. I would imagine short films. It'll probably be a lot doing the festival circuit for a fair old time. So stay tuned, because as soon as we know, you'll know. And you probably won't need us anyway, because it will just take over.
It'll be all over the place. Yeah. I'd love to see that on around Christmas time.
Yeah,
I think that would really work.
Lovely.
It won't be this Christmas, obviously.
BBC production of it.
There's nothing you like more than crying at Christmas, isn't there, Dan?
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Well, it's like a dark gothic fairy tale. I think like on at the right time on the right channel, I think that can do really well.
Yeah, very much so. So congrats to all involved, and stay.
I wouldn't want to put Mrs. Brown's Boys in a jeopardy though.
Don't bring those words into the show.
Yeah, I'm hoping Michael McIntyre's got a role in it somewhere. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's like the second or third time both of those names have been mentioned this week.
Yeah.
Not on the show, thankfully. It was before we started recording.
Ex-hamster. But,
yeah. Yes. So, from all of that goodness to this week's topic. As we said earlier, Sarah has... We knew that Sarah's artwork was great anyway. Now, be quiet, Sarah, because we're going to be nice to you here. And we don't care that you're going to... You're one of the most modest people ever. So you just have to be quiet and listen to us while we're nice to you. But in all seriousness, Sarah's work is absolutely brilliant, and we've been hoping that she would get stuck into comic artwork, of which she's jumped in head first. But it isn't like digital, it's not like sketches or anything like that. But Sarah's work is very much, I mean, no doubt you've probably seen some of her work online anyway, lots of painting and mixed media. And what other, before we get stuck into it, what sort of media do you prefer to use in? Because, I don't want to say exactly what you've been using. Might as well hear it from you yourself.
Okay. I don't think there's anything I don't use. That's...
You're not one of these people who like, I painted that in blood. Do you do that sort of thing?
I haven't done that. I was going to say something awful then. Anyway, no. But traditional art materials that you can actually buy in an art shop. All of those, but that's the beauty of mixed media, is that you put anything on the page that helps you get the picture that you've got in your head, or helps you tell the story that you want to tell, almost regardless of what it is. You can collage in fabric, or photographs, or anything textured or whatever, and I'll use all sorts of, I was making something earlier, and on one little thing I've used alcohol inks, sort of mica, which is a sort of a weird mineral thing. I've used acrylic paints, I've used watercolor pencils, I've used interference paints, I've used sort of everything, you know, like sort of about 10 different things on one little block that's about sort of 5 inches by 4 inches, you know, so I'll just throw anything on.
It's like experimentation, isn't it?
If it ends up looking like what I want it to look like, then I mean, which is why when I did Tony's pages, you know, I was sort of, you know, like I made a quilt out of tissue paper and I sort of, you know, made air out of little bits of cheesecloth that I dyed.
You are a crazy person, Sarah. We know this for a fact. It's really evident. But for those who haven't seen it yet, Sarah made a breeze, because there's a breeze that has an important role in her story. And she made, like, using little strands of material to show the wind. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Incredible stuff.
And to see that in sort of in the physical pages is amazing anyway, because I was the lucky man that had the job of scanning them in. But it's that sort of it's that process of painting and mixed media artwork in comics that we wanted to just focus on a little bit before. Because we've talked about a lot of different styles of art. You know, we've talked about the digital, we've talked about penciling, inking and stuff. But we when it came to doing the show, I was like, oh, we haven't properly shone a light on, you know, this. We've talked about some artists that we love who do fully painted stuff, but certainly we haven't really discussed in any sort of depth like mixed media artwork in comics, which and Sarah described the things that she was doing there, certainly with Tony's comic. And to see the original artwork's amazing, but I love seeing that. I mean, thankfully it scanned out all right, thank God.
But you got a question. You've had a couple of people curious as to how you scanned that in, haven't you, online as well?
I made a blood pact with an ancient evil deity, and
Joe.
No, no, it was. All right, I'm gonna start.
Yeah, tell us. Yeah, go
yeah,
on,
yeah. Well, it was basically just scanning. Thankfully, it was a half decent scanner, and it's just as high resolution as I could get. I think because the pages themselves were, what was the size, Sarah?
It's not quite A3, was it?
No, it was a bit smaller than A3.
The ratio right for what you needed. Figured you could shrink it, but
which is perfect. Big. Thank you very much for that. But the artwork was already bigger than the intended sort of the final product, which is always going to help when you're like you're doing your artwork anyway, because those fine little details and all those little things are going to look so much better when it's shrunk down to about 67%. But it was just purely a case of, like, you know, my scanner was okay. I scanned it high resolution. I think I scanned it at 400 dpi. Now for print you only need 300 dpi, but I always like to go a little bit bigger, and then, you know, because it just kept the clarity of it even more when I shrunk it down to the exact size it was supposed to be. And thankfully, because with the materials you had used and everything was so clean and crisp, and that's what I loved about the page themselves as well. There wasn't any murkiness, you know, all this material, thankfully, there were it stayed in place as well. Like Tony was talking about the breeze.
Yeah, that's a worry, isn't it?
I don't want to scan something and all of a sudden something, the hard work that you've done has suddenly
it's all
moved.
Fallen off. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's something definitely to bear in
mind.
I think when you're scanning your mixed media work, just be aware of that as well. Because when you're scanning it, I mean, Sarah's work was brilliant. It was clean. I didn't have to put anything down on the scanner. It's not like I had to put like some acetate in front of it or anything like that. I didn't have to worry about scanning it and then picking it up and then having to clean the scanner because there was loads of dirty marks from like glue and stuff. Mm. It was all, you know, it was all perfect. So, and I'm just glad that, you know, because I'm scanning for someone else's work for their book that these guys are putting together. So thankfully, it came out well and everyone was happy.
I suppose our only alternative there would have been to photograph it, wouldn't it, way?
Really old school.
And that's a very old.
I mean, like, you know, like sort of Dave McKean's Sandman covers and stuff.
Yeah, we're going to get onto them. Yeah.
You could never have shoved them in a flatbed scanner. I mean, no. I tried to keep those pages for that book. I knew they were going to be scanned, even though I was sticking all sorts of random stuff on them. I tried to keep them at least flat, you know, so you could get it into a scanner. But I mean, they used to do proper big 3D assemblages for comic work.
Yeah.
In fact,
and
the olden days, they had to be photographed.
Yeah, they must have to, because, like, I mean, we're talking about like people who have done this work at A3 or 11 by 17 or whatever your artwork is. But there are those of you out there who, you know, you're going to be painting something A2, you know, A3, which, you know, even if you take it into a professional company to get it scanned, it's that size, it's going to cost you a pretty flipping penny to get that sort of scanned. Right. So if you've got, like, bigger work, you know, we talked a little bit about it there, like Dave McKean and stuff, what are the ways that people can actually, like, get that? You know, you're talking about photography. Is that the best way to do it? Just how would you get that done?
Yeah, I don't know what they did with his stuff.
Oh, I've seen photos of it in the studio when they were I mean, because, you know, I mean, like, they were huge, weren't they? It was about 4 foot tall. He did those assemblages for the, or maybe.
So it was almost like a shelf arrangement, wasn't it? As I remember off the top of my head, with a central image. So there was almost surrounded by shelves with things on them, and there's like a.
Yeah, little trinkets on and stuff. But yeah, I've seen photos of that cover, like, you know, well, that assemblage in a sort of a proper photography studio being, you know, photographed professionally for the comic. And like Mark Buckingham's Miracle Man covers, because they were the same. They were like sort of 3D. They had to be photographed. So yeah, all a bit of a palaver.
And it's something that certainly most people probably took for granted, because you see a little comic book with this wonderfully painted cover and you look at it for 5 seconds and probably move on and you don't realise the scale of what some of this
is. The return you get for that, probably people wouldn't do it as much, but back then it was cutting edge, wasn't it? We were trying things all the time, you know. Yeah. I think the small press is perhaps where that lays now, because you don't get it with Marvel and DC so much, do you?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and certainly I think with the advances in printing technology and the better printing got, painted covers, you know, painted artwork and mixed media artwork went from being something that was an extravagance for just the cover, then all of a sudden you could do it all the way through. Because I think if it's newsprint comics, as much as we love them, you know, the dirty paper that we always laugh about and stuff.
Yeah.
But if you got painted on that, you're going to lose so much. You're going to lose so much of that texture. But with the advance of, you know, glossy paper, or, you know, even, it doesn't have to be glossy actually, but you're seeing more and more painted and mixed media work in comics probably than ever before, aren't you now?
Yeah, I think so. And in a lot of high-end art books as well. There's that blurring of the lines between that sort of thing now, isn't there? Especially with this comic collector spending a lot on high-end art books and high-end hardbacks, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Do you see that stuff?
What do you guys
think? The big artist edition things where you get to see it all.
Yeah.
All sides.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
I was going to say, what do you guys think of the move to digital and digital painting? I don't quite hold, being a bit of a philistine, maybe not, I don't hold it as quite high regard as someone who does it traditionally. I've got nothing against digital painting whatsoever, but
It's a funny one, isn't it? It's there's a less of a texture to it for me sometimes, you know.
It depends who's doing it. I mean, like, sort of written in big letters down here, I've got a couple of pages of notes just to make sure that I didn't completely run out of things to say, but like, I was going to say that The person I think who's working now, who's continuing tradition of like really visually arresting mixed media style artwork, is Mitch Gerrards, and he's all digital.
Like, and he mixes photographic stuff, doesn't he, as well? Yeah. There's an element of that.
Yeah, I mean, he'll scan in, like, you know, a bit of sellotape and put that in there, and he's like sort of smudging stuff around, and he's got that real sort of like mixed media vibe. Like,
he's only really moved into that recently. I remember
he hasn't always worked in that style.
Yeah.
But I get the same emotional response from his art as I do looking at Dave McKean or Sienkiewicz's art. You know, so he's got feeling to it, even though he is working digitally, and he's doing some stuff that you could only do digitally, you know, like, so he's not just trying to mimic the look of a painted page or the look of a collage.
Yeah.
You know, he's really experimental and inventive, and I love the work he's been doing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw myself at his feet in New York and kiss his toe.
Yeah, there you go. The whereabouts would that just be, in his hotel room, Sarah? Yeah. Would that be?
But I think that's when you see artists like that who start to mix it up, they really do start to like really push it. I mean, I think Sean Gordon Murphy is another example of someone that he had such a sort of clean style, And as it went on, you know, like Punk Rock Jesus and stuff, you saw this person.
I love Punk Rock Jesus.
Yeah,
so
just
good.
Going off on a tangent of, like, you know, the ink washes and the splashes and just throwing everything on a page and seeing what turns up, you know. And you see a lot more sort of veteran artists, for want of a better term, you know, as soon as they've, you know, that they've made their name maybe with a bigger book, as soon as they start doing their own stuff, they can just play.
Who's the best example for me in the way I discovered mixed media in its purest form was Kirby. If you look at some of the Fantastic Four, Kirby would stick photographs in the background.
Oh yeah, there's a brilliant example actually when we a shout out to at Jonathan Wyke on Twitter, because when we put a shout out for this, you know, who's your favorite examples of it, he said The King, of course, and he posted essentially a collage page. Did you see that on there?
No, I haven't seen that yet. No, which is that from the FF? Is it or
I think it might be the FF.
I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
But it's a beautiful page where essentially the only inked bit is the speech bubble and the character, and it's very interesting what's going on around it.
And I think he got a bit of flack for that. I certainly remember some English Marvel UK letters pages mentioning it, but I actually don't mind it. I love that sort of experiment.
They got flack then. Yeah. How would it be treated now?
I don't think it would be overly hated. I don't think, do you? Or
I don't. No, I don't think so. I think, if anything, I mean, you see it, people are influenced by this work. You know, looking at those pages, I've seen that sort of style. If we're talking about a bit closer to home, just the look and the feel of it, the work of like Andy Clift and Adam Faulp and this sort of stuff, you know, you can really see what he's doing. I mean, he's always going to influence everyone, isn't he? But yeah, collage always fascinates me.
Sorry. I was going to say, there's a really good article online somewhere. If you just like search Kirby collages or something, somebody's written a really, really good, almost academic article about all his collage influences and all the stuff, and with like some really good examples of his best collages. Yeah, it's really interesting. I had it up on my computer at work for ages. I kept going back to it because for Adam's book, you know, Adam's doing a Kirby tribute book.
Yes, I was chatting to him about it today. It's very dope.
Yeah. And so, because I did a collage Silver Surfer page in the, you know, like my homage to the way Kirby did his collages. He was always really in circles and sort of stuff and concentric circles on his collage pages. So I tried to, you know, ape that a little bit for my entry for Adam's
book. Are you in that book, are you, Sarah? I never realised.
Oh, I don't know. I
suspect you'll be. Just to give that a quick plug, because I was chatting to Adam about that, and you can pre-order it. I pre-ordered it today at goodfornothingcomics.wordpress.com, or follow Adam Faulp, AdamFalp on Twitter, and you get it. It's like a really exciting project. Really, really interesting. You know.
He said he's going to have them at Leamington and Nottingham as well, so I'm going to pick up a copy at Nottingham.
Yeah, we will probably, as we're going to be at Leamington, we'll see if we can get an interview with him and talk more about it. So
yeah, definitely. Nice. Yeah. And also speak to him about he's just done a tour of comic shops in America.
Yes, I know. I definitely want to speak to him about
this.
We
were talking about that. He went to a place
with 750,000 back issues.
Jeez. And he met Jim Rugg there. He basically met Jim Rugg. And who's he went for dinner with? Who's Birds in Boxes, Sarah?
Daniel White.
Daniel White. He went for lunch with Daniel White as well.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I'm going for lunch with Daniel White next week.
Are you?
Well, I'm going to go for lunch on my own, and it'll probably be a meal deal for £3. So, obviously, we mentioned the King Kirby. When we put in the showers, there was a few examples. We said, we sort of said, what are your favourite examples of like painting and mixed media? Obviously, Simon Russell mentioned Sienkiewicz. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I feel we can't just gloss over that name.
Yeah, of course. I mean, to me, Sienkiewicz was a guy I first saw on Moon Knight. And he had that Neil Adams vibe going on, I think it's fair to say. Would you agree, Sarah? Or he's got that sort
of... I think he was deliberately aping that style when he started, because he was young and that was almost a house style, wasn't it?
And it was also something slightly rougher and slightly different. And I remember it was a slow burn and then it became a hit. And then I probably first noticed his mixed media stuff, I'm going to say on, because New Mutants wasn't really mixed media, although it was experimental. I'm going to say Elektra.
Yeah, I was going to say you had a little bit of, like, because I was flicking back through New Mutants earlier to sort of see when he started to kick in. And there's a, he's got a few bits in there where he's like stuck a, you know, like a photo in or whatever, you know, like
he draws lines between characters and stuff like
he's
that, doesn't he?
You can see the way he wants to go, but he doesn't quite yet know if he can get away with it.
Yeah,
you know?
And the Demon Bear stuff is the famous one, isn't it? And that's and I don't think the newsprint suited that too much. It's a little bit muddy on occasion. And then, of course, Elektra Assassin blew everyone's minds. You know, it was just incredible. And that close-ups of faces and, you know.
That was the first non-British comic I ever bought.
Really?
Blew my mind. I never looked back. That, I picked up Elektra Assassin and a Swamp Thing on the same day. It was the first time I found a proper comic shop. I was 17, I think. Walked in, picked up those two, walked out, and that was it. It's like all I'd ever read was 2000 AD. I'd never seen anything else. What is this?
I always wondered how much money Matt Murdock was on when I read Elektra, because he's like got like about a 10-story house.
You know, lawyers, they make a lot of money, don't they? You know,
yeah, true.
but isn't he a public defender that doesn't make that much money, or is that?
He got in the in the Frank Miller series in Daredevil. They like did a cutout of his house, and he had all these secret rooms and all sorts. It was like a proper Bruce Wayne thing, wasn't it?
Okay. I quite like that little flat he had in the TV series.
Yeah,
but that ain't cheap either. You can't get a flat like that in Hell's Kitchen. Yeah. Christ Almighty!
The big neon light would obviously fuck a lot of people off, but it doesn't really bother him.
All American stuff is like that, though. Do you remember? Like, you remember Married with Children? I used to watch that, and I used to think they're supposed to be this like sort of poor, like working class family. They've got this huge house.
They're living
about,
in the Cosby
like,
house. Yeah. It looks like the Cosby house to me.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was like, how come all Americans live in mansions? I used to be convinced they did. I don't think they actually do.
No.
But anyways, I've got off topic.
Back to Assassin. So Elektra Assassin was, how many issues, Sarah? Is it six or seven? Eight, was it? Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and I bought it as it was coming out. And it's a dense read, as comics, a lot of comics were back then. I remember it just fucking weirded me out. Who's the character with the moustache who's in it? Who's the secret agent sort of guy who's on a couple of the covers? I can't remember his name, but remember thinking, this is just fucking weird. But it was strangely addictive.
That's the thing about certainly with a lot of mixed media work as well, isn't it? It pushes the boundaries of what you perceive to be a normal comic or normal narrative, which is working on to like one of the next names that was brought up, the work of Dave McKean, Martin Simpson, at Simo Paints. He said Dave McKean's work on Mr. Punch, Signal to Noise, and Black Dog, and you know, certainly the Sandman covers and things like that. That you know, I think
Black
to
Dog
from...
made me miss my train station twice.
That book is so amazing because he just goes from style to style, like, you know, like sort of almost from page to page. It's like it doesn't even look like it's the same person who's done the whole book.
But with the bit where the guy comes out of the house and he's surrounded by the big red, I don't know what you call them. It's just, I remember just blowing my mind. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm absolutely obsessed with that book to the point where I wrote this like long treatise where, I thought I was like super learned. I wrote this long thing on it. John Freeman messaged me and said, the Guardian had were told they would get the first review for it. And I wrote this long review and John from down the tube sent it to Dave McKean, and Dave McKean said, no, that gets the first review.
So
absolutely over the moon.
Oh.
I recall that now. Yeah. I remember the review.
And I went and saw Dave McKean wasn't there, but the people who published it. Can you remember their name, Sarah? I can't remember who published it now.
No, it was like financed by the sort of the to do with the sort of 100-year anniversary.
Yes, you're right.
So I can't remember the name of the actual publisher, but I know it was all sort of he was working it in conjunction with them to like officially recognise the 100 years.
Yeah. And they gave me the artist proof, so my copy is the artist proof, which I was like super excited about. Yeah, But I bought it multiple times for other people, so I'm sure they got their money out of me. Do you mean? But
I think that brings up an interesting point, though. I mean, because with that story, it's changing styles and, you know, the way it's telling a story throughout. And for that story, it works. But I think sometimes artists need to be careful. Someone like Dave McKean just did it, you know, can pull it off. But you got to be careful. Well, you got to think about your reader when you're telling any sort of narrative anyway, can't you? Because sometimes you can look at painted or mixed media pages and all the pages are gorgeous. You could stare at the artwork for ages, you don't care about the story. The story's toffee. You know, you don't know where it's going. And if you don't really know...
And that's a waste.
Yeah, because
those pages take a lot of time and effort to put together, and if it get, you know, you don't want to waste it on a bad story. But going back to sort of Electra Saturn, how you're saying it's a weird like sort of story, it's like hard to follow, and like sort of when he did the stuff in the what was the one-off graphic novel, the Daredevil Love and War. Standard one that they did. I reread that for the first time since the 80s the other day. Okay. And that is also like quite an abstract story, quite a sort of it's not a straightforward story. And I think mixed media artwork lends itself better to those stories that do leave you thinking and do sort of, you know, have, you know, that they're not just telling a straightforward story.
They play a lot into mood and vibe as opposed to often story taking.
If you've got like a story that just plods along and it's, you know, it is a very straightforward story, then that's probably not the style of artwork that you want or that you need.
And it works brilliantly for like dreamlike sequences or you know, if your book is a very dreamlike sort of landscape, then
you can change pace, you can change style. And that often really works, doesn't it? You know, we often see changes, you know, like The Wizard of Oz, we often see black and white colour changes, don't we, and stuff like that. Which brings me to a question there, Sarah, and you being the expert now, obviously. What is the definition of mixed media? So would mixed media be one page you had a drawing in realistic pencil line and the next page you had a drawing in cartoony animation style drawings? Does it have to be an actual physical change of... Do you know what I mean? Physical change of media more than that. Do you know what I mean? Does it have
I can answer your question. Okay. I mean, it's not... The official definition of mixed media is that on the same painting or the same, you know, sort of piece of work, you're using more than one type of art material. That's right. all the main definition. So even if you used... You know, even if you haven't had a painting that had sort of, you know, some bits done in pencil and some bits done in acrylic and some bits done in oils or whatever, that would still count as mixed media. But yeah, I suppose in the context of a comic, as you say, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to use different mediums on the same page.
I don't know. I just looked at the Twitter. I just looked at the Twitter, and some people are showing mixed media as moving from a sort of a diagrammatical pencil line to a fully painted panel within one page. Do you know what I mean? And I'm totally open to that. I just wonder what everyone thought about whether that is mixed media.
I wouldn't count that as mixed media,
right?
Personally. I mean, but for me, I don't know. You might.
I draw with a pencil and then ink it and then scan it in, but I don't count my work as mixed media.
If you had three panels on a page and one was an outline of, you know, like a thumbnail, what the middle one was an ink and pencil line, and the third one was a color, would that be mixed media? Yeah.
I can see the example that you're looking at, and that's one, because sometimes you get that in the back matter of a comic, don't you? Where they show you how you progress from the sketch, and I wouldn't call that page mixed media as such, because it's really slices from three different pages.
Yeah, it's a process.
If Dan, for instance, pencils and inks his page, and then he goes in and, you know, adds splashes of color and maybe like, you know, a bit of collage as well, that then becomes.
Yeah. I think what the guy who's posted it is saying is about how the penciler has put like an ink wash on first and then the colorist has gone for the ink wash. So I think that's what he's talking about.
Gotcha.
I mean, a lot of people sort of basically anytime they see a painted page, they call it mixed media, but it isn't really if it's just purely painted, like Simon Davis's Slain, the Britannia Chronicle.
Yeah.
That wasn't mixed media because that's just, you know,
I've got a page of that in front of me, Sarah.
I bought a page from it as well. It's so beautiful and it's gorgeous, and I love all painted artwork, but that's not mixed media. Mixed media is when you're sort of basically throwing two different art materials together that you wouldn't usually put together, or almost, you know, sort of, and it often involves collage or yeah. or sort of, you know, yeah. use of non-traditional yeah. art.
I wonder what
well.
The most I wonder what the most extreme version of that is you could go to. I mean, could you have a pencil page and then you turn the page and you have to walk into another room and someone's doing a spoken word performance? Do you know what I mean? Or a somersault? I wonder what
yeah,
I wonder
that's where some,
the worst yeah. the furthest you could ever take it, you know. Interesting.
Well, this
it?
I mean you see, you're joking there in a way, but that's why digital art, much as I'm, you know, a total Luddite. I mean, I only read real paper and I only work with real art materials, you know. I don't do anything digitally, but that's why yeah. I think the stuff that like, you know, some people are doing now is actually showing how digital can take mixed media almost to the next stage, because you can mix anything together.
Yeah,
in a
which ties computer. In ties into, you know, a question that we got.
Okay.
Yes. This from JWC, who's been mentioned a few times in the show, and they were interested in how the working definition of mixed media has evolved, as you say, Sarah, with the popularization of digital colouring.
Yeah.
As I say, it's pretty easy to get the visual look of traditional mixed media with digital painting tools.
Yeah, that's true. Is it then really mixed media? That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, if I'm looking at it on paper, it's just digital. I just see it as digital. Because for me, like, mixed media and stuff like that is a tangible, physical thing. But that's just because I'm old school and a caveman.
and the page that they've used as an example is a David Mack page with that sort of watercolour yeah. look. And actually, I wouldn't call that mixed media anyway, because even if that was done traditionally, it's just a painted yeah. page.
I mean, I think so. David Mack is obviously a name that we have to mention on this yeah. show. You know, it'd be a crime not to mention him alongside, like, Dave McKean and stuff, because Dave Mack has done so much over the years, isn't it? Like, from that, like, Kabuki, and obviously yeah. like his famous, like, Daredevil run.
Yeah, and Alias and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, to me, if that he Daredevil added a... run was great. What was it? What was the character that he introduced?
Oh, what's the one who doesn't speak?
Oh God, yeah.
But
I've been in it recently. Yeah,
but
yeah.
That was a real... That came at a time when that was a book that wasn't like anything I was reading, because the narrative went off into different ways, and he was like, you know, there was children's sketches mixed in with, like, painted handprints, and, you know, as well as all the other stuff that David
and
Mack
I
does.
Think he's used certain, like, little inserts of photographs and stuff, and that's true mixed media, isn't it, you know?
I mean David Mack seems to be specializing more nowadays just in pure watercolors, like all the covers that he does.
Yeah,
I mean, he does a ton of covers, and, like, they're all traditional watercolors still. He's not doing those digitally. Although I did really like the comic that he did recently with Bendis, which is called Cover, not to get confused with covers.
Yeah, I've not read that.
I love it. It's really good. And he's painted all the interiors for that as well. And so, because they're interiors, so he needs to go quicker. They're not quite as stylized and fancy as his front covers, you know. But it's still a really unique-looking book. And the story's great as well. Definitely. I think the first trade's just come out. I would recommend that.
I might get that, it's then. Not yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I would recommend that. It's a,
he might be
it's
in
a
New
fun
York.
Story.
He might be in New York. He
I
often
think he
is.
Yeah.
I think another person you're hoping to bump into, Tony, is Enrico Marini, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
He does the same with pens, watercolours, and then inks over the top.
Yeah.
And when he posts his videos on Instagram...
It makes you cry.
Yeah, he's signing at the... He does make me weep. He's signing at the Europe Comics. As soon as I noticed he's signing at the Europe Comics stall, I immediately texted Arena and said, right, you're hooking me up, I'm meeting him.
Yeah.
She sent me a picture of a champagne glass.
And that's why she's our friend.
What about drawing, or what about art mixed with text? Is that mixed media, Sarah?
I don't know if, like, in the art term, you know, like, I mean, let's say mixed media as an art style. Certainly, like, I've seen sort of, you know, people doing paintings with text, either the handwritten or sort of, you know, it's like book pages mixed in and so on.
Yeah.
So I think that count. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll be bringing up someone later from the small press scene, Gareth Brooks, and he embroiders some of his comics.
Yes.
Absolutely mixed Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I use a lot of embroidery in my work. I love embroidery. I'm not as good at it as Gareth. I love using embroidery in my work. Yeah. And not many people do, so it's kind of
one of the big differences as well. We're talking about obviously the texture that you get with like mixed media and when like you're making collage and things. And I think personally you can replicate. I mean, with the how digital has just evolved and is improving, and like, you know, people's skills with it are improving as it goes along, things will always improve. And certainly it can replicate a lot of these things that we're talking about. People can with the brushes that you get for programs and stuff, you can replicate a watercolor brush, you can replicate this. But I think one of the things that is almost impossible to replicate is texture sometimes. When I scanned Sarah's pages, it kept the feel of that, you know, even though it was a flat image, you could still, there was texture to the material and stuff in it. And I think that's extremely difficult to get in digital. I mean, going to painting as well, I always marvel at it whenever I'm at a gallery or something and you're looking at some of these ancient paintings from like the 1800s or whatever, and the fabric looks like fucking fabric. And you know, it feels like you could reach out and touch it, and it would be that fabric. That is, you have to be a master to do that. That boggles my mind every time. So to do it in digital would be nigh on impossible, I think.
You look at an old master in a gallery, you can still see the brush strokes in the paint, and you think Rembrandt held that brush, and he made that mark, and that's that sends shivers down my spine.
Yeah,
lovely, isn't it? It's amazing. Yeah.
And also, when you, if you're looking at it from just a self-published or you know, just self-created artist, one thing, and I'm certainly moving over to digital as well, but one of the things that you're missing out with that is you won't have original pages to sell. We talk about how glorious it is to see these painted pages, and seriously, folks, even if I don't have the cheddar to buy original pages, but I love seeing them in the flesh, just flicking through like a portfolio and looking at like some of these painted artworks. I mean,
and it's the confidence of the line that gets me. That one we were looking at this week with Enrico Marini, where he just drew a glove just with a paintbrush, and it is just perfectly formatted, just with three or four
hesitation.
Slices. Yeah, just goes for it, just instinctual, beautiful. You know, it's so good. I was thinking about this a second ago, guys. Probably the first example of mixed media for us in Britain is the transition of a lot of comics like Eagle and stuff like that had stories that started as a drawing and then went into a photo story. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Fabulous Freak Brothers when they decided to stop smoking weed? And they stopped. Do you remember that issue? And they stopped smoking it. And it slowly it becomes a photograph of them just sitting on a couch.
Yeah.
And then they thought, fuck that. And they just started smoking weed again.
Oh, that's amazing.
I used to
love photo stories. I honestly, I know I've said this before, I say it all the time, I wish they'd come back. I wish like that sort of the 2000 AD would occasionally have one, or sort of any sort of like anthology comics, or just something like just a couple of pages of a photo story. They're hilarious.
And really big in girls comics as well, weren't they, in the 70s and 80s? My aunt was a housemaster at a girls boarding school, and she was always giving me these comics that she was in, you know, playing the teacher and stuff like this, where they would go along and do the photo story.
Ex-boss when I worked in WH Smith head office, exciting, isn't
name
it?
Dropper.
You know, like when sort of you do that thing where like sort of a new person comes and they'll tell us something about yourself. He produced a load of old Jackie magazines, and he used to be like the handsome young boy in all the photo love stories. It was brilliant.
Yeah. I remember some really scary photo stories of like of horror stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, you know, where they've drawn over the top of them like the blood effect or the monster effect or stuff like that. They used to do that as well, didn't they? It's quite common.
They still do them in Viz.
Yes,
they're taking the piss.
See, you've got a photo story, and they draw the effects and stuff on. That's absolutely mixed media. That's a perfect example, like you say.
Yeah.
Oh, we should bring them back.
We should. We're going to do one with Vince drinking a milkshake. That's going to be the new
one. Flipping hell. I think we had a couple of new names reply to our shout out. So, and cool. There's a couple of cool artists that have been named here, or some new ones to check out. So we'll just give a shout out to at CF Sherritt. He said, a lot of my work is in atypical media, and my fave comics artist is, and I'm going to murder this name, Brecht Evans, who watercolours mostly. Have you heard of that artist?
I haven't.
Maybe. Yeah. But I did check out the link, cfsherritt.com, and there's some lovely stuff on there. Very much reminds me of it's an artist from Warwickshire. Very much reminds me of the sort of stuff you see like Avery Hill and things like that. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah.
Dave Crane, Dave the Crane.
I like Dave's stuff. Yeah.
Yep. And he said, Sienkiewicz, McKean, Mac, obviously, and Baron Story and Kent Williams in that tradition too.
Yep. Yeah.
Ian, I was going to come to them.
Yeah, he says, Ian Miller in his Luck in the Head era, all feels very early 90s in origin, racking my brains to think of more recent developments in that field.
Yeah, Dave Crane does a lot of sort of found images and stuff like that. He does some really interesting stuff. Him and Simon Russell are pals. I think it's when I first met both of them, they were tabling at Comica, and I bought a couple of things off them. Really, really interesting stuff. Yeah, a great style. Yeah.
Lock your doors and bolt your windows, because Dave Kennedy sent us a one as well, at Cherry Sheriff. He said, I always loved Accident Man for that, and Bisley on Judgment on Gotham. Bisley's obviously a name that you've got to mention as well when you talk about painter style, Simon Davis and Bisley. Yeah, Bisley was just a juggernaut when I was a kid. You know, talk about a style that you will recognise anywhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm gonna be hated by everyone to say when Bisley started in 2000 AD, that's when I didn't enjoy it as much, because everyone tried to replicate his painted style.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't because of him; it was everyone trying.
Not necessarily. Do you know what? I would read a Belardinelli, a Dave Mike McMahon Slane long before I would read a Bisley Slane, I'm afraid. Yeah. But it wasn't just him. But there's so many people decided, like, it was such an explosion of people loving that comic.
Yeah.
That a lot of people ate the style, and some of them were less messy. Some of them weren't as great, you know.
Yeah.
But I miss the black and white, like Belardinelli and Dave Gibbons stuff that was in there, very sort of, you know, traditional British comics.
Yeah, it certainly was a sort of sea change, wasn't there, when Bisley sort of exploded. He literally exploded onto the scene, really.
Yeah, yeah. Can someone ring in and ask him to show Pineapple Story, by the way, please?
Oh, yeah. He's still working on it. Yeah. He's an amazing painter, though. My favourite Simon Bisley stuff was the run he did of Doom Patrol covers.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's a spectacular artist. So, like, full of himself, but he's an amazing artist.
He did those Shit the Dog comics, remember them?
Yes.
It's the story revolved around a dog taking a massive shit.
You'll always just bring up something like that, Butcher, and I love it. Fucking hell. John Late mentioned Bias, but some of Grant Richards' work for Away was incredible. Yeah. Can't agree more with that. Both friends of the show. But he says several pieces weren't used, and each one was a work of art.
Yeah, congratulations to Grant for passing his Kickstarter as well. I'm looking forward to seeing that sketchbook.
Yeah, nice one, dude.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, do you think that people? What do you think, Sarah? Do you think we're missing that experimental edge that we had with Vertigo and some stuff like Kirby and stuff these days? Would you like to see more of it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, purely selfishly, that's my wheelhouse. I love it when people, you know, sort of push the push the envelope a little bit. I mean, any type of experimental design, it doesn't have to be painting, mixed media, whatever. I mean, like, who was the guy who did Catwoman? J.H. Williams III, IV, V, whatever his number was. He experimented with, like, panel design and stuff. He did Promethea as well, didn't he? And so although his actual artwork is your traditional painting, inking, colouring, you know, sort of like, sort of the you know, he experimented with the way everything was presented so much. I just love seeing something a little bit different, I guess. And where people don't think that they've got to tell stories in the same old way. I mean, like, there's a lot of good comics coming out nowadays from Marvel and DC, but they don't look very exciting. they're often telling really, you know, they're often telling sufficiently good stories that I'm really into it, and the art's very good and very nice and clear and good to look at and tells the story well. But yeah, I would like to see people just, you know, with a slightly different style sometimes. I mean, they're the comics that I tend to really respond to. Like, I don't know if any of you read Mountain Head, the first issue came out on Boom, like, this month. And, oh, God, what's the guy's name? It's something, Ryan Lee. Ryan Lee is the artist.
Yeah.
And his style is so different from anything I've seen for a long while that, I mean, the story was great too. Like, you know, so luckily, I mean, it's an all-round great comic. So, but the art really, you know, spoke to me because it's so different from anything I've seen. And it's, you know, as time goes on, it's more difficult to be different, isn't it? You know, because, you know, like, all everything's already been done, you know, like, it's, but whenever I see something that, you know, just doesn't look run-of-the-mill house style,
but that's where companies like Marvel, do you remember Marvel's graphic novel line? You know, so I think it started with the death of Captain Marvel, and you had super boxers, and you had, I think, Hookie with Spider-Man, and you know, which was Muth and stuff like that. They were producing, you know, graphic novels that they could take a chance on. There was stuff in them that was, you know, Epic Magazine, for example, is the best example of that, I think, from Marvel.
Yes.
You know, there was some real experiments going on in that. And
I've got quite a few of those. I mean, often they go off to like more to the, you know, fantasy art, don't they?
Yeah, they're very sort of heavy metal. But then again, heavy metal. Heavy metal.
And I don't really like that sort of stuff as much. But no, there's certainly a lot of interesting stuff in those old Epic magazines, definitely. And as you say, those things that they bought straight to graphic novel before, you know, without releasing the monthly or whatever, they did take a bit more of a
of a and risk. Even if you look at,
I don't know how successful they were.
It's not everyone's cup of tea, but Ronin experimented with format and stuff. You know, you had the fold-out pages and, you know, the real sort of... Back then, we hadn't really seen manga, and it was like a new thing for us. And I remember being totally entranced by that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. But people don't always respond well to it, do they? I mean, like, even when Sienkiewicz did the Demon Bear stuff, you know, people hated
it, didn't they?
Because it didn't look like normal comics.
Well, Bob McCloud, if you look at the style...
Normal comics, I'm more interested.
The style change was too profound there. I think Bob McCloud to Sienkiewicz was a huge leap. You know, it really was. Jump, they went from being like almost like a comic that could be given, we would probably describe as an all ages comic, to being this like just whacked out. You know,
And another name that came up, I always learn with every show anyway. Jenny Robbins, at Jenny Robbins, she said, I came here to say David Mack. Also, Linda Barry. Does that name ring a bell?
Oh, man, I can't picture it at the moment. I have to look it up while we're talking.
Shame on us. That's another one to look up. And who else was there? There was someone else. Oh, no, that's what I wanted to know. Yeah, because obviously the name was brought up by Dave Crane, Baron Storia and Kent Williams. And I know, Sarah, you said you were going to talk about them.
Yeah. I was basically going to say with Baron Storey that everybody we've mentioned owes a debt to Baron Storey, because without him, there'd be no Sienkiewicz and there'd be no Dave McKean and there'd be anybody. Baron Storey was the original. I mean, if you Google his art, you'll immediately see Sienkiewicz and McKean in it. But he came first. You know, he wasn't working in comics. He's an illustrator. He did a load of book covers, stuff like that. You know, he wasn't a comic artist, but he was the artist that they all saw and have all acknowledged, you know, in various interviews and stuff as being their primary influence. And he is spectacular. And he did the only comic work that I'm aware of, because I looked it up earlier to see if he ever has done anything in comics, was he did one of the stories in the Sandman Endless Nights collection. I don't know if any of you...
Yeah.
You know, it was the book where each of the seven Endless got their own story. So Death got a story, Despair got a story. So he did Despair, who's like, you know, the little fat ugly lady. or did I ever tell you? Sorry, I'm going to go off on a tangent. You know, like they did cosplay group. You know, they do cosplay groups.
Yeah.
I was once approached... Like, because people were putting together an Endless group and they had all six, but they didn't have anybody to play Despair, who's the little ugly woman with the manky teeth, who's like naked with huge, like her boobs are like hitting the floor because they're so saggy. And they're like, oh, we thought it'd suit you. So I told her to fuck off. Okay. Anyway, so yes.
We'll get him, Sarah.
So Baron's story does the despair story in This Endless Nights, and it is so out there and so amazing that, like, straight after it is a Sienkiewicz story, and Sienkiewicz is, you know, trying his best, bless him, but he looks pedestrian compared to the story that came before him.
Oh my word.
Because Baron's story is just so,
amazing. If ever there's a recommendation for you, it's that sort of line, isn't it?
I've looked up Linda Barry, by the way, and she's got a really underground style. I knew the name, but I don't think I've read much by her. But it's a real sort of, some of it's done on like lined paper, some of it's done in biro, some of it's done with bits stuck on it and coloured, you know, and it almost looks like some of it's done in crayon and stuff like that. But
so you mean it's a bit like that, what was that, my something is mum's.
That's exactly is Monsters, or it was. Yeah, that's exactly the one I was thinking of.
My favourite thing is Monsters. It's a bit like that, isn't it?
You told me off for not having read.
It's great. It's well worth reading. But yeah, so Baron's story, basically, look into him. He's amazing. But he's the name that always comes up when all these other artists that we're talking about are talking about who they're influenced.
And there you go. Yeah. If you learn nothing else from this episode, there's I think that's the perfect sort of segue to move on, isn't it, really? I think
we went off on that one, didn't we?
Yeah, that's, I mean, to end on the one that started it all, almost. Yeah. I mean, we could talk for days and days, and obviously Sarah proved that she's an all right guest, so she can't get out of not coming back now.
Yep.
Just
be a regular.
Matt Strott, before we mentioned a few of the other people that got in touch, so Matt Strott said, doesn't get much better than Sonny Liu's The Art of Charlie Chan Hok Chai. Have you seen that? That's good.
I didn't think of that, but yeah, because it's kind of more cartoony.
Yeah,
but
he said, I'm not sure I can even classify it as a comic, but it's still an amazing example of mixing media. So,
of course, the other one is Zap Comics. You know, the underground comic scene was a mess of just do what you like, wasn't it? Biro drawings, text pieces, and photo stories, and that was a real mixed bag.
And the resurgence of zines. Zines are very, you get a lot of, you know, sort of collage stuck together stuff, you know, like sort of, you know, all like little drawings and text pieces all sort of ripped out and glued on and, you know, so with, you know, with line drawings thrown in. So it's, I've always responded to that sort of, it's the energy of it, you see. That's what I like about this sort of stuff. I love, like, sort of looking at something that looks that, like, when somebody put that together, they were like in a frenzy. You know, they were so excited and so enthusiastic, and that's what I get from sort of things like McKean and Sienkiewicz, is that it looks like they were sort of, you know, in some sort of artistic, you know, sort of fugue state when they were working, and I love it.
Yeah,
I think we've proved that it's not all Art School Confidential. That scene in that movie where the geezer is naked, covered in blue paint, and just throws himself at a canvas. I like to think we've proved that isn't what we're looking at. You know what I mean? It's like.
But we definitely, we're always open to seeing more and more sort of, especially original artwork and mixed media and stuff like that in the comics we read. I know certainly we're blown away with what you guys out there can do, whether it be with actual physical media or digital or however you make your comics.
Mm. And do you know what? Always experiment. Always be up for experimenting. Yeah. I love to see it, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And we've loved this conversation. So I knew this was going to be a fun one this week. So... but I've got to keep the train on the tracks. So have we got any shout-outs this week, Jess?
I've got a few, actually.
Yeah, we got a few this week, and we've got a few recommendations as well. So let's... go on, take it away, Tony.
A little shout-out for Susie Gander, who's just sent me a rather saucy picture. Not a photograph, I'd like to add. A drawing. It's of a lady naked handcuffed to a bed. There's a hint it may be in a future issue of something. But the I did actually ask if Chris had posed for it. But apparently, she's not answering that question yet.
No, but we love them both.
Yeah, it's a big shout, Susie.
Does the lady have a ginger beard?
No. Well, I can't covering it up. Oh, we'll see what you mean. Right. Sorry.
Oh, Tony.
Yeah, see what you're saying. Rusty top damn seller. That's what they say, innit?
Never heard that expression.
Jesus H. Christ. Just go on, move on. Next.
Next is Gustavo Vargas. One of my favourite creators. I managed to be the first person to order his sketchbook, and he included a sketch in it as well, which is pretty nice.
Nice.
Look up Gustavo. So it's Gustavo Vargas. Gustavo vargas.bigcartel.com. He does some great stuff. A really, really big fan of his. Also got contacted by Ladies Do Comics. They're running a professional development workshops, and this is a project they are running to help them raise money for their graphic novel prize this year. The workshops include such people as Hannah Berry, Carrie Fransman, and Simone Lear. If you go to www.ldcomics.com, Ladies Do Comics, so ldcomics.com, it's running between the 12th of October and the 2nd of November, and you can book your tickets through Eventbrite. So if you go to their website, you'll find a way. And as you all know, work with Rachel, Rachel Ball, love her stuff.
Yeah.
And we're doing, hopefully going to do something in the next issue together. And she's a cracking creator. And if you want to get some advice from someone, I would suggest she's a great person to go to. There you go. That's all my shout-outs.
Good shout.
Nice. Yeah. And speaking, Hannah Berry is also going to be at Leamington Comic Con.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is taking place. Dan, you've got some of the...
Yes, this, well, when you listen to this show on the Monday, it'll be on Saturday the 5th of October.
Yes.
Yes, 10 till 5, Parish Church, Leamington Spa. We have to click a link in the show notes, and you can buy tickets on the door or online.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day. It's the same venue we were at last time, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah,
yeah.
That was a great venue, and there's going to be loads of great guests. And me and Dan are going to be repping the podcast table there.
The ACP, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have all four issues of Awesome Comics, which we didn't have last year, did we? We didn't have the whole set. So if you haven't got the comic yet, drop by, come see us, talk some comics, buy some comics. Ours will be the one where there'll be two blokes probably looking gormless, won't we, Dan?
That's what we do best.
Yeah, and probably like drawing and doing some artwork as well. We'll have some artwork and other goodies for you. So, but drop by. We'll
plenty of photographs, boys. I want photographs sent to me.
Oh, well, you'll get them. we'll find out whether you wanted them or not afterwards. but we will also, we're going to try and get some audio on the day as well, because, like we say, there's some great guests there, and sometimes there's great creators that turn up at these conventions and we end up interviewing them as they happen to be at our table, so you never know what you get. So in next week's show, obviously we're recording it a bit early because Tony's off and and we've got the convention and stuff, so we're recording it early, so hopefully, touch wood, well, not hopefully, we're gonna do it, Dan, we're gonna get some interviews, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah. So next week's show will be a bit of comic talk and some audio and stuff like that. So, all good fun. But, yeah, that's Leamington. Also, on the 19th of October, a couple of weeks later, Saturday the 19th of October in Nottingham Conference Centre, is Nottingham Comic Convention. One of our fave shows we like to visit every year. Tons of great exhibitors and guests there. We're going to be there as well. Tony, you're going as well, aren't you?
I've got the No Brow table there, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so there's all kinds. I mean, I could list off loads of creators and stuff, but there's a great exhibitor page. Not even the actual website, definitely check out the website, because that's a good example of, like, you know, much like Thought Bubble as well, having all the creators all lined up and clicking through to, because I like to sometimes when you go to a convention make a small, almost a mental shopping list of the tables, you because you can't visit every table at a convention, of course you can't, but it's good to pick out some new names. So definitely go to nottinghamcomiccon.co.uk, because we love Kev and the guys from Nottingham Comic Con.
Yeah, we do. They're great. And get a copy of the anthology, because it raises money for some good charities.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a couple of us that got bits in the anthology as well. Even I did something a little bit different.
All three of us have done something, haven't we? Have you done thing for it, Sarah?
No.
No. Thank you for your concise answer.
But I am going to the Comic Con, so I'm going to represent myself there in person rather than on paper.
Very good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, we understand what you mean.
Good.
Very good.
Yes. Good. I'm glad you do.
Can I just also say, if we're doing the convention calendar, I've just booked tickets and I'm going to be wandering the aisles at LICAF at the Lakes Comic Festival on the 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Yeah.
So if you see me, come say hi. I try and wear the T-shirt.
Yeah.
I'm not tabling. I just thought I'll have a fancy going up to that, because it's a beautiful part of the country. Yeah. And I was chatting to Ian and Nicole about it. And I'm also at MCM with No Brows, so the 24th through to the 25th through to the 27th of October at the XL Centre. We've got a table there as well, so please come by and have a chat with me. Yeah. I'm sure we'll be going.
And if you see Tony at the Lakes, or likewise, if you come up to the Awesome Pod table at Nottingham, and you say, have you got any of that special stuff?
Yeah.
Then there will be under the table, in a dirty brown paper bag, there will be copies of Tony's comic, The Whore Chronicles, which, you know, keeping in the vein and the spirit of the whole thing, we're selling it under the counter.
And I want Joe just to roll her eyes and go, filth.
She really likes the book, man.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. If you want a copy of that book, which you should, because, you know, we've talked about some of the artwork here, but to actually see it printed is lovely as well. It's come out really nice. So you want a printed copy of this. Go and get it from Tony at the Lakes or us at Nottingham or Thought Bubble as well. Yeah. We'll talk more.
If there's any no-brow stuff you want as well, I'll have it with me at the Lakes. I won't be tabling, but if there's anything particular that you'd rather just get handed to you rather than get posted, then give me a shout.
Yeah, we will be talking more about, obviously, that's three conventions in a row for October, and Tony and Sarah are off to New York for another one. Obviously, one of the big ones of the year is Thought Bubble. We're going to be talking properly about that in a few weeks, but we're not going to say anything right now. But yeah, we're going to do a little bit of a focus. So
it's about time with Thought Bubble as well. We love it. We go to it every year, and it's good.
They're a great bunch of guys, so it's going to be good to talk to them. So any other shout-outs?
Sarah, have you got any?
Oh, no, that's one thing I didn't think of in advance.
Oh, I got a shout out to Mr. Cucumber. Cliff Cumber. Sarah's actually now joined her first ever WhatsApp group, which is me, her, and Cliff, which you're quite excited about, weren't you?
I was, because I didn't realise that the people's names come up in different colours, and I thought that was really cool.
God. You just wait till you start getting sent the sort of pictures that me and Dan get on a regular basis.
thank you.
We do send them as well, Vince.
Hey?
We do send a few choice ones.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. As you do.
Anyway, from the shout-outs to the recommendations, who wants to go first?
Why don't you go first? You can bookend.
Okay. I didn't read many comics earlier in the week, but I made up for it this weekend with going through some of the comicsology sort of selections that I got this week. Obviously, picked up Out of Darkness, which is my favourite title anyway. But there was two that I was very much interested in, and one I'm going to start off with one from Vault Comics. I don't think I've recommended a Vault comic on here before, but I know they've been mentioned quite a few times. They put a great work, don't they?
They're really up and coming. They're really gaining some sort of popularity again, because they had that little dip, didn't they, where they got a bit of bad publicity about payment to creators. But I think they've overcome it, and they sort of apologised, and they're putting out some experimental stuff, which is really interesting. I know Ram V's done a few, didn't he? He was on the show before.
Yeah. Is that These Savage Shores?
Yes.
That's an amazing book in itself.
Yeah.
But the one I want to talk about is written by Tim Daniel and Michael Marici. I hope I've said that.
Yes. Marici, isn't it?
Art by Joshua Hickson, coloured by Jordan Boyd, and the cover by Joshua Hickson. This one I was hearing a lot about, and knowing my love of horror, this definitely sort of ticked the box. This is The Plot, number one. This is one of the books I've been looking forward to for a long time, because it just looks right at my wheelhouse. It doesn't look like shock sort of horror that's just gore, and this is atmospheric stuff. Basically, when Chase Blaine's estranged brother and sister-in-law are murdered, he becomes guardian to Mackenzie and Zach, the niece and nephew he hardly knows. Seeking stability for the children, Chase moves his newly formed family to his ancestral home in Cape Augusta, which overlooks a deep black bogland teeming with family secrets. This is great. It's just fucking awesome. This book, it very much, the pacing is just spot on. I haven't read anything by Michael or Tim before. I've heard what's Tim Daniel done before? I've heard that name so much.
He's quite a busy artist, isn't he?
But this, I mean, it says on the back of the book, you've got a lovely sort of disturbing image of a sort of character rising up from a bogland, and they're sort of crying out, but there's loads of vines and stuff sort of growing. It's almost like a swamp thing, like image. It's really weird how the organic is sort of mixing with a haunted person. And on the back it said, in order to receive, first you must give, which alone is a little bit scary.
Especially if you're in prison.
Exactly. I did think about that as well. That made me laugh when I was reading it. But this is this is spectacular. I'm on for the long haul on this one. I think it will also make a fantastic trade, but I think this is one I'm gonna, you know, I've been looking for that, you know, that sort of horror, ongoing horror tale to sort of scratch that itch. Obviously, I was reading Harrow County and stuff like that, and this fits into that sort of vein as well. But it's very much a character piece. It's very creepy and disturbing. There's the house itself. I think when you're doing a story that involves not a haunted house as such, but a creepy looking house, the house has to look the business. And I must say, Joshua's work on it is really brilliant. I've come to appreciate, because I'm trying to work more on like backgrounds and details now as well, whenever I look at a panel, I'm looking at just the amount of work that's gone into it, even though sometimes it could be a couple of lines that just gets across what you're trying to tell. And like, he's got vehicles, he's got houses, he's got swamps, he's got everything, he's got like crowd scenes. It's a wonderful character piece that really sort of builds up, and there is a, if you like your monsters, this isn't like a haunted house either. There's something pretty horrific and monster-like going on. And the first issue is very much a mystery. There's a splash of violence, which I didn't expect. There's family secrets going on. I think I would like to say, oh, I know this is where this is going, because you've got the guy who's looking after his niece and his nephew. And so I think you've got your three major characters there. You can see right. how that sort of develops. But I'm not quite sure. It leaves it on such a... It gets stuck right in. As soon as the family are in the house, weird stuff starts happening, and it leaves on a bit of a cliffhanger. So, yeah, if you like your horror to sort of unnerve you, not smash you over the head with, you know, just obvious stuff, this is... And it, also, if you like... the stuff like The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix, if that's the kind of, you know, creepy character horror, you know, things will only creep you out if you care about the characters. Mm-hmm. And this book does it. It builds, the first issue is building up really interesting, fantastic characters that already I'm invested in, and I can't tell you if they're going to live or not. Plus, the covers are badass. The second issue cover is an amazing, creepy print. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like a... It seems to be a figure, a face looking up from like what looks like a black sort of oily lake, and there's loads of fingers coming out of the lake to cover up the figure's face, and it's beautiful stuff. So the plot is definitely a recommendation. I'm on board for this one. I've been hearing a lot about it online, all over. So it's nice to sort of you know, the hype is real, people. The hype is real.
Yeah, I must stop by their table actually. I expect they'll have a table in New York. It'd be nice to stop by and see some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I wear my T-shirt, I might get a discount.
Is that just in general, wherever you go, like McDonald's and things like that?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So the plot number one is definitely an issue one that is worth checking out. So whether you buy it in, because Vault are readily available in a lot of comic shops as well, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, they're pretty distributed right by Diamond now, aren't they? Yeah.
So get this, especially if you like. I know a lot of fuss was made over like things like Witches by Scott Snyder and stuff like that. The real the uptick in creepy horror in comics has really been good to see, and it's character horror as well. So the plot is going to sit amongst them, and hopefully it continues to creep me out. So.
Yeah.
Brilliant. There you go. That's my first one.
Sold.
Cool. Sarah, would you like to go?
Okay. I've got two, but one's really quick, so shall I just do them both?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so the quick one, it's only because it's been recommended before, but a long time ago, because I remember Nick Brokenshire mentioned this when he was on, whenever that was.
A couple of years ago. He put a picture of himself with his pants on his head afterwards. Do you remember? Just to show.
Oh, good days.
I do remember.
Yeah.
I've still got that up on my wall. Yeah, I haven't really. I'm joking. Anyway, but yeah, he recommended this, and I'm going to recommend this just in the spirit of what we've been discussing. Stray Toasters, 1991, four issue miniseries. Sienkiewicz. It's utterly mental. It's harsh. It's not an easy read. Because it's basically about a serial killer who's mutilating kiddies, so that's not a nice thing. And then the detective who's looking for him is mentally ill himself, and so you get lots of hallucinatory stuff. But I'm recommending it because it's just a peak example of mixed media in comic books, and it's very best.
An unfinished final issue, isn't there, or something?
You're thinking of Big Number. Buzz.
Oh, I am. Sorry, mate. Yeah, I am. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That's the one that they put the photocopies out of, didn't they? Yeah,
no,
yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're thinking of Big Numbers. No, Straight Toasters was complete. It's four issues. That's all it was and all it was supposed to be.
It's in print still. I don't know whether you get it, would you?
No, it isn't. And so I checked to see how people could get it. You can get it on eBay, the four issues, for about £20. So it's not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not bad. But it is. It's Sienkiewicz totally off his meds, totally unfettered. Absolutely utter genius, and I'd recommend it to anybody. So if listened to this and they're thinking, oh, I wonder what this mixed media stuff's all about, that's the book you pick up to find out what this
is. So evocative of a period of my life in the early 90s, was it, I suppose, back then?
Yeah, 1991.
Yeah. It's so evocative of that aesthetic of the time of just rebellion and punk and that sort of new punk thing going on. We had Deadline to follow that, and we had, everyone was like really trying hard and experimenting with stuff. And I've got really great memories of that book. I must reread that. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy it. I don't know where my issues are. I'm going to buy it again when I get to New York. Yeah, good shout.
Cool. Yeah. Everybody should do the same. So my proper recommendation, something a bit more current, because I thought I can't send everybody off to eBay to buy old stuff. from Image, and it's not long started, it's on issue 2, so it's still, you can get in and pick it up. Coffin Bound, writer Dan Watters, and the art's by Danny Strips. Remember her? You all met her in the 2008 But she don't call herself Danny Strips anymore, so she's obviously stopped stripping. She's just called Danny now.
I had to stop calling myself Tony Strips. That's one choice.
Yeah, but that was named after chicken strips, though.
Oh, dear. Colours by Brad Simpson and letters by Aditya Bidikar, who I remember meeting at Thought Bubble last year, and he was very nice.
Yeah.
He's the guy who did all the Black Crown lettering.
That's why it rings a bell so much. Yeah,
he's a really inventive letterer. I mean, in this title as well, he does some really interesting things with lettering that I haven't seen before. I like his style. Yeah. Anyway, this comic, I saw it described as an acid-drenched grindhouse road trip, and I really can't think of a way to sum it up more succinctly than that. From memory, the actual sort of like solicit just said something like, guns, entropy, explosions or something. Anyway, but it's better than that sounds. The story is basically this: the heroine is the like lead lady is a lady called Izzy. She is. I mean, it's set in like sort of. It's not even a sort of a future dystopian. It's obviously a slightly like different reality to ours. There's some weird shit going on. She's just found out that she's had a death sentence, sort of a contract taken out on her by this thing called the Earth Eater. She's basically trying to outrun it and trying to sort of undo her life. So she's trying to go back through her life, sort of removing all traces of herself, because she said, if I'm not going to be in this Earth, it can have nothing of me. So I'm going to remove all traces of myself. So she's like retreading her steps. I'm not describing it very well, because it is just an absolute trip of a comic. It's mental. She's followed around by this character. The character design on him is amazing. He's just called the Vulture. He's basically kind of robotic, but his head is like a vulture's skull in a rusty birdcage. And he's wearing this big old sort of like brown great coat and like sort of old army boots. And he's very funny. He's a very witty character. And she's just like, sort of, she's, why are you here? Why are you following me? And he's like, because, I've followed dead people, and you're going to be dead soon. So he's kind of like latched onto her. And she sort of runs into some old boyfriends and finds out that it was an old boyfriend who actually took out this contract on her when he was like high off his face, and now he totally regrets it and he's trying to take the contract back, but you can't.
So we've all like, done that though, Sarah. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Have we all? Yeah. And then she ends up in this strip club where this stripper's like stripping and then takes off her skin, a bit like, you remember the Robbie Williams rock DJ video?
Jesus, yeah.
No. so like she strips off her clothes but then keeps going, so she strips off her face and rips off her skin, and honestly it's I've no idea where it's going. It's mental, but I love every second of it. It's well written. It's funny. The story's great. All the character designs are great. Danny's art is spectacular. It's got a bit of the Paul Pope about it. Sort of style. It's like, again, like I was saying, I like to see something that looks a little bit different from every other comic that's out there, and it looks a little bit different from, you know, sort of what, you know, sort of most of the comics that are out there. It's beautifully done. I mean, beautifully rendered. She's a clever girl. You know, and the lead character, the female character, is beautiful. Beautiful, almost enough to turn me. She's like,
there's your pull quote. There's your pull quote, Sarah.
The only bad thing about it is I tend to read a lot of comics at ice hockey in the break, and I was reading this in the break, and there's a load of kids sat behind me. I turn a page, and there's this like full-on, very graphic sex scene, and I'm like, oops, boys, don't look at that. Don't look at that.
That's why I don't read Razzle on the tube.
Well, I wasn't expecting it. This was issue two. There wasn't anything quite that rude in issue one. But no, honestly, I can't recommend it highly enough. You know, story, dialogue is crackling. The art's beautiful. Character design's great. The world design is great. It's even got an orange Volkswagen Beetle in it, which was my first car, so that was nice. Yeah, it's great. Buy it. Read it. Go.
There you go.
Nice. Love.
Not bad.
Who wants to go next?
Me, yeah. I've got a bit of a strange one. I saw it on Reddit. I often pop onto the like the comic stuff on Reddit.
And how do you spell that?
You know, Sam. So this one's called the Metaphysical Mr. Fister. And it's done in like the style of a sort of an old 1950s, 60s comic. But there's a real kind of... yeah, old. It's hard to describe the what sort of angle they're going for, but essentially every page they're trying to go for, like put it on newsprint stuff. And I can't really tell you too much about what the story's about because it's fucking mental. It starts off with kind of like a comedian. It looks like it's set in the 60s, 70s, and she's talking about a set doing a jokes. And then it cuts back into sort of a caveman time, and a caveman rapes a cavewoman. And then there's a storm, and it's just absolutely crazy. And it jumps back to present day with the comedian sort of telling her story, finish up the joke, and then in a bar. And then this guy, kind of a bit of a weirdo, starts talking to her. And then he appears to be some sort of like cosmic god. And yeah, that's about as much as I got from it. And then it finishes up with next issue, Mr. Fister, the minister. Strapping because it's gonna get weird. I mean, it is fucking weird from the get go. It's really kind
I think McKee says that in story, doesn't he? Always include a caveman rape in the first pages of your story.
One thing I was very, very pleased to see was the next minute when you flash back to the caveman, he's getting his comeuppance big time.
Yes.
So he doesn't stay Mr. Smug Rapist for very long, which is good.
No. Yeah, he gets his comeuppance, and
that's a terrible Mr. Man book, that one.
Mr. Comeuppance.
No, yeah. Mr. Smug Rapist.
I'll send these. You've seen this comic, Sarah. I mean, what did you take away from this? Because it was just like. I finished it and I was like, what?
I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, he's clearly sort of. He's got his. Well, superhero character, kind of. Like, you know, the guy with the sort of the F on the front. And you know, you see him in. Like in the sort of the caveman figures, don't you? So obviously that character's been around since prehistoric times, and it's kind of this is just setting up for he's obviously going to go further with it next time. But I don't know if you looked at the guy's website, this Jeffrey Krawcheck or however you pronounce his name, but it's really, really appropriate that you picked him because he does beautiful mixed media paintings all over his website. When I'm speaking this comic.
He's done now, this Sarah. Yeah, since we made it cool.
Common as fuck. But he's got this great sort of series of paintings that look like bodies at like a body farm, you know, those things where they leave the bodies out to just like decompose and stuff in America. Like for scientific research and stuff.
Absolutely. I don't know about them.
I'll
is that what Reddit's about? Is that what Reddit has on it? I don't understand.
No, Reddit's just forum where people talk about everything.
It's basically a subreddit for everything you can find.
Okay,
pretty much everything.
I must get on this Reddit thing.
Oh, but God. On his website, if people go to his website, the whole comic is on the website.
Yes.
Like you could just read it there, so people can read it for free and see what they see what the they future. Make of it. But I think it has promise.
Yeah, I liked it. It definitely. I haven't read it properly. I only looked at the first couple of pages, but it's definitely got a real underground style to it, which I found appealing. I've got to tell you.
Yeah, that's the words I was trying to claw out of my brain. It comes across as a real kind of like underground comics with an X.
There's like an anti-establishment, you know, anarchistic sort of style to it, which I kind of, I'm drawn to with that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah,
definitely.
Especially with the cover, because it's kind of got like a what you think an atypical like 1950s cleaner than clean kind of superhero.
Yeah, like a jock turned superhero kind of thing. Yeah. But even that plays slightly with your senses, doesn't it? Even that's like not quite right, isn't it?
There's
something you sense something weird is going on behind the doors of that one there. Yeah.
So we'll put the link up for that in the show notes and you can set me straight on what you think it's about.
I love it when he does that.
Yeah. Tony, what's your one this week?
Mine. Now, I chose this carefully. So mine comes from Gareth Brooks, who's an old table mate of mine. And a past guest. Gareth's on the show, wasn't he, years ago? Yeah, he does stuff. And he loves to play with format and style, Gareth. I often think he just makes a rod for his own back. What was that comic where he drew it and then he coloured it all in black and then he had to rub the black out and it was just like, oh my God, just draw something, Gareth. Do you know what I mean? But he's done... He does come up with some really genius stuff. And his award-winning book, The Black Project, everyone should read, which is a comic that was embroidered, as we were talking about earlier. And Threadbare, which is the book I'm going to talk about here, is a return to that style. Has anyone read either of these two books?
No.
I haven't read Threadbare yet, but I've got everything else he's done.
Yeah, he's great. He did a few things. He did Man, Man and Woman, Woman when we used to have a table. And there was just like stick figures that were just like hilarious incidents of like real people but drawn as stick figures. And then he did Excuse Me, Can I Use Your Toilet? Which was about loads of sort of different workmen and the silly conversations they had, which is sort of a very real thing. But Threadbare is this embroidery style. to sew a comic is quite something. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I can't sew my jeans up when I split them.
No.
You know, I can't do anything like that. So this is quite a letdown.
I wish you'd do your jeans up more often.
You don't.
And, no, I don't.
And the book starts as it sucks you in with this sort of, you think it's going to be an autobiographical thing. So get this, he's actually sewn the notes page from a smartphone. And even along the top, you've got 3G, you've got the time, you've got 72% on the battery, you've got notes, and he's got a to-do list. And I won't read the whole thing out, but it does include things like get drunk with B, don't buy a greasy sausage roll from the pasty shop, and ignore the man watching pornography on his iPad. Yeah. So he's sitting on a train, and then he's basically two pages later, because there's a lot of space to these pages I'll talk about in a minute, but the fourth page is the third page is he overhears a phrase in the train carriage, and he overhears a woman saying, "The last time I was in love?" And he puts a tweet out, and he's sewed the tweet. He's embroidered the whole tweet and the people who've replied to it. So I can hear two elderly ladies on the train talking very candidly and movingly about the last time they're in love. I hope my pen doesn't run out. And so he overhears this conversation between these two women. And it starts off, the woman says, it must have been 1992. And it leads on from there. And it's two women... who are basically describing in very sort of personal terms about the last time they were in love and how it affected them. And it's a beautiful book, man. It's just really emotional. And he adds what I can only guess is the real dialogue between these two women, which is sewn onto quite scant and bare pages. So one page might only have two word balloons sort of sewn into it. But it's so poignant, it's so touching that it doesn't matter. It's a reasonably quick read, but what he does do is after a few pages, you get a counterpoint. You get you don't what I suspect get is the two women. You get a woman undressing, pulling her trousers down, and the threads of the embroidery are sort of swirling round her, and she's becoming unraveled in the image as it's being pulled apart, and it's a view of the front of the image and the back of the image. So for those that embroider, I'm obviously a very popular embroiderer, the back of the image is a sort of slightly messier version of the front. Is that right, Sarah?
That's correct.
So you get the front and the back of these images, and he sort of, it's like a photograph, or a, you know, I imagine a photograph or a scanned in image of it. And it gets, in a way, impressionistic. You get a man as well, and the man is looking down at his genitals and ejaculating the thread out from himself, and it swirls around the air around him and stuff like this. And, you know, yeah, it's proper, you know, adult stuff, but then again, it should be. And it's just so beautifully paced, and it's just atmospheric, and there's a real texture and counterpoint, and the image is becoming increasingly more complicated and increasingly impressionistic, and there's real-time sexual positions between men and women, and against that, so there's a man having sex with a woman, she's laying down, he's sort of behind her, and then just there's just a speech balloon at the bottom of the page that says, well, there's not much more to tell, and it, the images counterpoint the dialogue in a really sort of a really really amazing way. And there's a real bareness and a somber bleakness to the pages, and an interweaving, and I say that in a literal sense as well as a sort of figurative sense, of the images and the words as they come out of the mouths of these two women against the images that he's sewn into the page. It's a genuinely very moving experience to read this, and I think it's something that everyone should invest in. It's done American comic size with a cardstock cover and interiors, very like our comic V, Sarah. You know, it's like that sort of feel to it, that weight to it, you know. One of the most final things they say is, one of the women says, do you ever think about how your life might have been different? And the other woman says, every day. And it's just little catches of that. It clearly is stuff that he's overheard and he's made a note of, and he's turned into this like nice comic. He doesn't name anyone. You don't know who they are or where he is traveling to or from or anything like that. But it's well worth picking up. Gareth does a lot of conventions. I suspect he's probably at Thought Bubble. Yeah. He's often on the Myriad table with them. If you go to www.gbrooks, so it's B-R-O-O-K-E-S, so gbrooks.com, or if you follow him on Twitter, at Brooks_Gareth. He's a funny guy as well. He does some deeply thought out comics, but when you meet him, he's a chuckle. Do you know what I mean? He's good company. I saw him at LCAF and we did have a laugh. That's my one. There you go.
Nice.
Nice one.
So I'll sign off with my second one. Quite rare for me to have two. For this one, let's set the scene. What do a conflicted bride, her dysfunctional family, a gang of Elvis-themed crooks, and one relentless sheriff have in common? Well, it's the new book from Action Lab called Going to the Chapel. Issue one.
They do some nuts books,
and
this is
part like of the Action Lab Danger Zone, and this is basically Action Lab normally do all ages, but they've got like a sub part called Danger Zone, which is for the more grown up books.
Yeah, that's some of the stuff I was reading, wasn't it? Yeah.
Now this is written by, and apologies if I murder the names, David Popozzi is the writer, art by Gavin Guidry, colours by Elizabeth Kramer, lettering by Ariana Mayer with Colin Bell, and the covers by Lisa Still, Manhouse, and Gavin Guidry. I've probably got that completely. I've murdered all their names, and I apologise for it, because this book is fucking awesome. it's an action comedy. It's a crime caper sort of action comedy about a gang of robbers who, instead of like robbing a bank or, you know, wherever, they're hitting a wedding. It's a wedding of someone from quite a well-to-do family who's going to be wearing quite an expensive necklace around their neck. It's a chapel in sort of in the middle of nowhere. You know, I can kill Bill. There is a chapel in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And this girl named Emily, she's going to be wearing a necklace, which is been publicized on the news, you know, because she's the daughter of a rich like a tycoon, and the necklace is going to be worth around $250 million. It's one of those gems everywhere sort of thing. So the bad Elvis gang are going to rob it. Which I thought was quite a good idea, like a gang robbing a wedding instead of like a normal sort of like bank robbery situation. And but things aren't as they seem, and it's quite it's a dysfunctional wedding anyway, because Emily isn't sure if she wants to go up the aisle in the first place. So you've got great sort of character building and sort of comedic moments throughout. It is initially, it's the first issue, so it's a setup issue, and the pacing of it is just sublime. It's the sort of pacing that I want to do with the sort of comics I make. There's Elvis sort of lyrics going throughout, especially when the Bad Elvis gang turn up. There's an amazing page that is just someone reloading a shotgun, and then you see the Bad Elvis gang, they're all dressed in sort of like these sort of maroon tuxes, but you know, like Point Break, you know, the Dead Presidents, they've all got like those masks. They're all wearing Bad Elvis masks, the Bad Elvis gang. So, and they're all walking along with shotguns in hand against this sort of desert background, and I absolutely adore that page. It's just badass. And then it literally cuts to black. There's like two pages of like the credits, so it feels very cinematic going forward. And then it cuts to 4 hours earlier, and you see the character sort of stuff before, and how the bride, she's nervous, does she want to go through with it. There's an amazing moment where she has, there's a, like a grandma sitting there, she's got like a breathing tube in her nose, and she's got a cigarette in her other hand, so that tells you what that sort of character's like. And she says, "Grandma Harriet, do you have any advice for the wedding?" "Yeah, monogamy is overrated. Always have a always have a side piece ready. I learned that in NAMM." It's already, and so she's like, okay, right, you know. So immediately you've got those sort of characters going through it. So you've got the dysfunctional family, you've got the groom to be, there's a story with him, there's lots of things to discover, there is mystery. I think things are going to develop as the story goes along, and it's all building up to when the gang sort of hit the wedding and things sort of kick off, because the police are called, and the issue ends. You have to read it for yourselves to see the sort of storytelling. I don't want to ruin too much, but there's a sheriff. There's a badass sheriff. You can already tell he's going to be a badass because he's got one hell of a moustache. But the gang are there trying to get what they need to do, and it's all going swimmingly. And then the chapel is sort of surrounded by cops, and you know, the artwork's brilliant as well, the way it's all paced out. And you know, there's a panel of, there's no sound effects or anything, but it's a panel of like the chapel from above as like ambulances and cop cars are just surrounding it, and you the smoke billowing out from the cars. It's phenomenal stuff. And the last panel is a sheriff, just looking badass, and he goes, "That's right, you dipshits, get ready for a good old fashioned ass kicking." And I just thought, fuck me, where's issue two? This is going to kick off. I think there's only going to be 3 issues of this.
All right. I like their books. You don't see enough of them physically, do you? You tend to have to read them on Comixology.
I think Action Lab started as a digital only sort of company. I don't know how many of them.
Yeah, I was reading their Puppet Master stuff. Do you remember? It's really good.
But this is phenomenal. It's great stuff. It's, you know, I like, in my head, it's like a movie that probably, if someone adapted this as a movie, it's not going to be as satisfying as the comic, because the comic's doing everything right.
Yeah.
You know, there's twists and turns in the first issue, which already set you up for the next few issues. It's digital. I only paid like $1.49 for it, and you get a lot of bang for your buck, and you know, it's a quick read, but an enjoyable read. I've already read it a couple of times because it was just fun to read. So, yeah, going to the chapel number one is definitely on my list. I'm going to keep going through a series. I mean, with this sort of story, it's clearly just a miniseries.
Yeah. You know?
But yeah, it's a hostage situation during a wedding. So, you know, and it's nailed the tone. I think with these sort of stories, it's all about the tone. It's not grim. It's not a grim and gritty crime story, which we're seeing lots of. The cover itself already sets it up, because the bride is holding a pump-action shotgun on the cover. That's an awesome cover as well. So it's well worth checking out, because, you know, there were two polar opposites. The plot and going to the chapel were like opposite ends of the spectrum, but both of them had exactly what I like in comics, which is great character work that hooks you in and keeps you going for the next issue. So yeah, definitely check out if you.
I've been to a lot of weddings where I've hoped there's going to be a lot of bloodshed. To be fair,
yeah,
and I'm that bored.
Yeah, you Yeah. The thing is that with this story, I'm not sure it's one of those, God, there's going to be carnage and dead bodies everywhere. But it's already set the stakes. You know, you've already got everything set up for, you know, it's not going to be, it's not a Tarantino sort of action comedy. It's something a bit more, I don't know how to describe it. Best way to say it is just get the comic, folks, because it was really brilliant. So yeah, congrats to everyone involved in it, because this is another one I heard a few good things about on social media, and I'm glad I checked it out. So sometimes the hype is real, as I've said before. And,
really, but yeah.
And sometimes an episode goes quite well, and this is one of those
episodes.
Yeah, it's
been really well. Yeah, yeah, I'm really pleased. Yeah.
It's been good fun this week. Thank you for joining us, Sarah. You've been an absolute star.
Yeah.
No problem.
Cheers, Sarah.
Yeah.
What are you doing in about a month? We'll just have you back every month, Sarah. I think it's good.
basically, to keep
I'm done now.
The others in place.
I've fulfilled my obligations.
You can go back on the Alpha flight. Go back on the Alpha flight one. Go on. Go on.
Yeah. But you really should listen to that episode anyway, because that's a great show.
Yeah.
Yes. So we hope you enjoyed this episode and learnt a bit. I've certainly learned a couple of names that I'm definitely going to be checking out more of their work. That's what's lovely when you get someone like Sarah who knows their salt on the show. Because of the, it's a shame because I've got to make even more show notes and links that I need to do on the actual page. But
sorry, and you've got to spell Sienkiewicz, which is always fun.
Yeah.
I might put Simon Russell said, stinky bits. I might put
yes.
It there. I've written it so many times that now my iPad recognises the word, which I'm like, phew.
That's handy.
I don't have to keep looking up. Oh, who did that book? Yeah.
Well, yeah. And if you do want Tony to stop showing off about this gangster life he's leading, then there's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if there's any events or anything coming up, it's going to be a busy few weeks, but because we're talking about these events, there might be some like exhibitions or like different gallery, you know, or any kind of comic workshop or whatever going on in your area. Let us know and we'll put a shout out on the show, and probably, you know, we'll retweet you, etc. as well.
Yeah.
And we'll retweet you via @theawesomepod. So follow us on there. Well, we'll put a shout out. We're recording early, so we're not going to put out any questions for the next one. But we will probably be, you know, I've sorted out the password and given the keys back to these two maniacs. So, but Dan's looking after it.
I'm going to be talking Rock the God on the next one.
Oh, nice one.
Hold on to your hat.
Nice. Yeah. And if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Likewise, if you just want to chat comics and continue this discussion, then join the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk. I think there's going to be plenty of discussion this week about lots of different stuff that we've talked about. So join that group, because that's always fantastic and a great community of people. We don't have really much to do with it. We just occasionally post things. It's everyone else that makes it great.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. Just helps get the word out about great comics and great.
We've got another one this week.
Oh, do we?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. You know, we haven't had one for a while, so I stopped looking.
That's good.
But thank you to anyone who shares the good word about this show. And we've had a bit of an uptake in listeners recently, so thank you very much for that. And if you listen to us on any of the networks, like, I don't know, maybe you listen to us on Spotify or maybe Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're also on the now dirty, infamous Pod Rusty Birdcage.
Don't encourage
me. Which I wrote down after Sarah said it, because it sounded dirty.
Sounds pretty day.
I brought you onto the show, Sarah, so you would stop encouraging him. I didn't think you'd
sorry.
before we even start recording.
I was describing a character in a comic who's got a rusty birdcage on his head.
Yeah, say it again. No, I'm going to when my phone bleeps, it's going to say Sarah saying rusty birdcage.
God. But where can people find us online, etc.? Tony.
neveronanything.blogspot.com or SAS and Big Cartel, because I've now got a brand, and it's SAS EZOHYZ. There you go.
Lovely. Dan.
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Yes. He's back in the game, aren't you, Dan?
I start speeding it up once again.
I've been seeing some of your sketches, and there was one of them, I mean, because I thought, well, you know, lots of heroic deeds, etc. But there was one sketch that looked like someone beating up someone carrying a child.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, that's all right then. I just wanted to make sure that's what it was.
Not another one of those.
I'm glad we cleared that up. But seriously, folks, check out Vanguard because it's the best webcomic out there.
Yeah.
You can find out more about my stuff at theredmousefrommars.com and follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo, which I'm posting a bit more on both after a bit of a gap from social media. So doing a bit more artwork, etc. And Sarah, thank you again for joining us. And now you are officially in the game of making comics, and you can't avoid it. Where can people find you and your fantastic work, etc.?
I am on Twitter at implausible17, and I do have an Instagram which I average about 1.5 posts a year on. So feel
average.
Free to go. It's slightly more than one a year, but not quite up to two. And that's The Lost Dogs Art. But yeah, don't bother going there because I never post on it.
I think your work is tailor made for posting on Instagram and stuff.
It's not square. It's the wrong shape.
Oh. And you don't believe in a crop?
No.
Oh.
Cut it off. No, I did post two things on my Instagram this week, actually. So I brought my average right up because I'm doing my little book about astronauts, and I've posted two pictures of that because I was quite pleased with that. So look at me. I'm an Instagram sort of influencer.
God, that's the most hipster thing I've ever heard on this show.
People start sending me,
Sarah, it was
like,
going so well.
Nobody's ever sent me anything free.
There is one thing we will not have on this show, and we've got it on the board of Awesome Towers. If you mention the word influencer, we will not have you back.
I should have said it right at the start. I could have saved myself two.
Harris the influencer sounds like a Kirby villain.
And what a brilliant influence she is on us this week. So thank you very much for listening, folks. Go forth, read loads of comics, experiment with the work that you're doing, and mix up some different things. Who knows what will happen? And we'll read it anyway, because we'll read anything because we love comics. So thank you very much for listening from Dan, Tony, Sarah, and myself. Have a brilliant week. And Sarah, what should they do?
Oh, good God, really? You
can
make me do this?
Yeah.
Bully like this.
I'm not going to... Okay. I'm not going to get any blame for this. Right, okay. Dan, what do they do?
Stay awesome.
Thank you very much. Bye, everyone.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
I might go on X Factor with my harmonica playing.
I think you have to sing, don't you? Yeah. He's the other one. You could go
talent.
On the talent one. Yeah, you could go on that.
I knew that was going to happen. Him and his fucking bum harmonica.
Oh, I'm going to have to do it with a fart one day, aren't I? See if I can do it.
You can never... No, a fart's not going to work in it. Surely it won't.
What if I rammed it right up my arse? It would hurt.
Well, there's the closing for tonight's show. See if we can get that working.